So tonight, wanting to tackle racism, the rhetoric and the reality, and how civilizations commit suicide. Now, before I even start, although most of you know my background, I should just state for the record, what are my credentials, what right do I have to talk about race? After all, I'm white male, too male and too pale for the new South Africa. I was brought up in the last British colony, Rhodesia, and I was raised in a colonial family, if you will, in Rhodesia. However, that family that I was raised under, my father being a typical English liberal, taught me very much to respect black people, to never call them boy, to respect them for their age. Remember, they're not your servants, they are mine. You don't have the right to give them orders and things like this. I had, from my mother and father, continually been taught how to be sensitive, how to be polite, how to be respectful in dealing with black people during the colonial era. But then I saw how much they loved my parents, my mother being a nurse. We'd regularly have people coming in. I remember one man coming in with an axe stuck in his head, literally stuck in his skull. "Madam, I need some aspirin." And so my mom sat him down and she gave him aspirin and she pulled the axe out. And I was amazed because my mother, being a nurse, she just reveled in this sort of thing. And this man was fine until he saw the blood. When he saw a drop of blood, he fainted. And to see the respect that there were for the hotel workers, for my parents and how they interacted with them, it taught me a lot about race relations. My parents also brought me up to be highly critical of the National Party and apartheid, and typical Rhodesian, I spoke out against apartheid. I thought apartheid was bad, evil, wrong, unjustifiable, and I would have counted myself as a typical English liberal on that side. At age 17, 1977, I was converted to Christ in Cape Town. So immediately, my whole life changes. And my conversion put me very quickly into touch with a lot of black and colored Christians. And those people who, I've heard it. In fact, I've been told by my children what they are taught at school. But there was no mixing between blacks and whites in apartheid South Africa. Well, there certainly were in the churches and the missions conferences and the ministries that I was involved in, because from 1977, I was regularly in black and colored churches, Guguletu, Athlone, Mitchell's Plain, all over the place. And I was going in and out. Yes, you did have to get passes to go in because whites weren't allowed into the black and colored areas without permission. And there was all kinds of, when the riots started, there was more tension, might be police roadblocks you got to get through to get in. When I started studying for the ministry, I chose, instead of going to the white theological college up in Parktown under Rex Matthew, I chose to go to the colored theological college in Athlone, because I thought, if I'm preparing for cross-cultural missions, why study amongst my culture? Let me learn in another culture. So I chose to go, and that meant I was a minority of the white students at Athlone Baptist Theological College, which is now Baptist Theological Seminary. And that meant that I was dodging rocks and petrol bombs, riding on my motorbike down Klipfontein Road to get to Athlone College each day, and during the riots, which was very severe in 83-84, I would often be dodging a riot on the way to college almost on a daily, if not weekly, basis. And then amongst the students, I learned a whole lot from them. And some of the students were coming in and, "Oh, look at the bruise I got from a rubber bullet from the police." Or, "Oh, you know, I was still got headaches because I got tear gassed on the weekend during..." "Well, what were you doing?" "Well, we were throwing rocks at them." And so I was amongst the students where this was taking place. But it, more than that, when I started my missions, it was going across the border to Mozambique, and I was working amongst the communists there, Frelimo. I was in their bases, I was in the camps, baptizing communist terrorists. My brother was fighting against Frelimo and the Rhodesian army, and I was baptizing them on the other side of the border. And so I got the opportunity of sitting down with and having meals with SWAPO, ANC, ZANU, ZAPU, Frelimo, FAPLA, a whole range of terrorists, PLO. I was in a PLO terrorist camp up in Zimbabwe, just outside Harare. And so I interact with a lot of these people, and I got to know everything from the other side as well. But this only deepened my appreciation of how I'd been deluded in my early years, and that communism was far more serious than I'd ever understood. And also, it made me realize that we were not fighting to protect apartheid in South Africa. We were fighting against communism and against terrorism. And that this is nothing about race. This is everything about communism. It's not black against white. It's black and white together against red. And that's my perception, understanding of the war in Rhodesia, the war in Southwest Africa, the war in South Africa. And I don't see it as a racial war. And considering I spent most of my life and the vast majority of my Christian life and ministry serving black people, risking my life, smuggling Bibles, medicines, food, other aid needed behind the lines into Mozambique, Angola, Sudan, Congo, Nigeria, ministering in some of the most desperately needy parts of black Africa, I would have thought I've got the right to say something on the race issue. But apparently you don't have a right to say anything unless you agree with the politically correct perspective. But for what it's worth, let me just say that Biblical Principles for Africa is dedicated to Fano Sibisi, a good Zulu friend of mine, that Faith Under Fire in Sudan is dedicated to Bishop Bulandoli of Sudan and to his brother who was killed for his faith in Christ, and Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, dedicated to the Christians of Northern Nigeria who I've got friends amongst. And so I think in my life and in our mission we've shown we're not racist, and we've poured heart and soul into helping black people across the border and all across the world. However, we've got to say a few of these things. The first thing I see is this is not primarily a racial issue. You can see there's an anti-Christian agenda all the way along. The news media has got the audacity now to come up with titles like this. After there was a mass shooting in California where 14 died, forget the fact that it's Muslims who did the shooting, let's forget about jihad, let's blame this all on God. And they attack Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Dr. Rand Paul, and Paul Ryan for saying, we're praying for you, our thoughts and our prayers are with you, our prayers are with the victims and their families. And the response is, God isn't fixing this. And here these people are trying to respond to tragedy, which the government has encouraged by bringing lots of Muslim so-called refugees and by all that they're doing. And by the way, this is taking place in California, where it's got the strictest gun control in the country. But they blame the lack of gun control for this massacre taking place there. And they decide to attack God. One of the most popular series in America right now is a program called Lucifer. And the program is, apparently Lucifer is coming as one of their, I don't know if that's their Twitter or Facebook's page or whatever. But when they're about to have the Academy Awards, the star of the Lucifer show pictures up in Times Square in New York with, I hope all those big award nominees don't forget to thank me. Which I think is an appropriate sign. But it just shows the blatant anti-Christ, pro-Satan sentiment in mainstream media. There was a time when most people agreed the devil was bad. Now there's a lot of people openly calling themselves Luciferian, satanic, wearing satanic things, and, you know, I love Satan, all hail Satan, and things like that. And they've got satanic churches, and it's extraordinary. New York used to use their skyline to put over Christian messages, like in 1959, crosses illuminated on them. Now they have sort of demonic-looking characters. The spirit of the age is not just anti-white, it's anti-Christ. And here you get a good example at one of these universities. Which university was this?
Stellenbosch.
On the left, you see a picture that some girl posted, some selfie. They're going to some space age party, and so she painted her face purple, which you would think maybe a bit silly, but innocent. But instead of putting it in the paper in color, they put it in the paper in black and white, so it looked like she'd painted her face black. And that was somehow meant to be an insult to black people, apparently. Although the Coon Carnival happily have them all painting their faces white, and that doesn't seem to be a problem. And she was suspended from the university until the color pictures showed that it was purple, not black. But this kind of deceptiveness in the media, why would people deliberately change a color picture into a black and white picture? Unless they're not trying to communicate, they're trying to confuse. So then we have this communist chaos going on UCT campus. Tuesday evening last week, my daughter Daniela was attending a ballroom dance events on the campus of University of Cape Town. And as she attempted to walk up the stairs to Jamison Hall, she parked below the where the statue of Rhodes used to be, and was trying to walk up the stairs to Jamison Hall. And there were mobs all over the place, and there were some people who barred her way, and they were cursing, and they were hostile, and it was evident they were very hostile to anyone who's white. And on the centigraph, the memorial for people who died in the First and Second World War, I won't show you the ugly, foul language on the other side of it, but desecrating this war memorial, they had a lot of anti-white slogans, and some of them with foul curse words and death threats on the other side. And she saw this, and there's all kinds of anti-white, kill all the whites type of mentality going around, being thrown around. We all knew that a shack had been built across the middle of one of the most important, busiest roads on the university campus, disrupting traffic, which is bad at the best of times. Rubbish bins were being burned. And you all might have seen that the week before, there was posting on social media of this man with his t-shirt, kill all whites, who happily seemed to have been, although the university said he wasn't currently a university student, but he was being accepted, and he is having a meal in one of their reses with this kind of poster. Now just imagine if somebody had a poster that said somewhere, blacks should be all killed, or even using some insulting words. Can you imagine what a scene that would have caused? Well, members of the Rhodes Must Fall protesters invaded the residences, they forced themselves into kitchens, they stole food, they intimidated residents, they threatened whites. The protesters then stole priceless, irreplaceable, original oil and canvas, framed pictures, and made a bonfire of them. The Molly Blackburn Hall, where the ballroom dancing was taking place, was invaded by thugs who smashed glass and stole artwork for destruction. Pictures were slashed, rocks were thrown, a bonfire was made in which many of these historic portraits were made. Now these are not prints. These are not replicas. These are one-of-a-kind, irreplaceable, unique artworks, representing a vast amount of work and history. There were arson attacks that burned up one of the campus buses, the Jammy Shuttle, which provides free travel for students of all races, do we need to mention it? Another university vehicle was burned, a police vehicle was torched, a petrol bomb was thrown to the office of the administration building, into the vice chancellor's office, causing severe damage. Considering how much Max Price has done to bend over backwards to appease all these people, that's really outrageous. When the police finally came onto campus, rocks were thrown at them. A running battle was fought between protesters and police over the next 8 hours, spreading onto main road of Rosebank and Rondebosch. The fact that the police could only use rubber bullets and tear gas meant the demonstrators weren't really afraid of them. The Public Order Policing Services, that's what the riot police are now called, POPs, Public Order Policing Services, had to use tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse the mob and bring this volatile situation under control. And they ended up arresting something between 8 or 10 students or people who were on the campus. Maybe they weren't all students. But many of the students and residents were traumatized by this orchestrated chaos on campus. This was not an accident. This was planned. And remember that the ANC has spoken about making the Cape ungovernable. Capetonians who've been stuck in some of the worst traffic jams in memory, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday last week, were horrific. We could sit here at Park and Milner Roads waiting for 9 traffic light changes without any movement because everyone was gridlocked. There was no movement. The reason was the disruption of traffic on the M3 motorway, which runs past UCT. And people would be asking, well, what can justify this mayhem? Think of the amount of wasted time, wasted productivity, how many hundreds of thousands of people's lives are interfered with by interfering with traffic at key times like that. The Rhodes Must Fall protesters claim that the issue is all about student housing and institutionalized racism on campus. The Vice Chancellor of UCT, Dr. Max Price, responded that more than 75% of University of Cape Town students staying in residence are black. Well, that is institutionalized racism. That is not the demographics of southern suburbs or Cape Town or the Western Cape. That's the demographics of Transkei. But they are discriminating against colored and white students in the Western Cape, and they are giving preference to black students, even those with far, 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 far lower grades. And they are institutionalizing racism on campus, anti-white, anti-colored, and pro-black. So, in fact, you need to be protesting the other way around. The racism is the exact opposite of what they claim. Max Price declared that university policy has consistently been to give preference to black students. Now let me just stop here for a moment. When I went to college in the heyday of apartheid, so they say, not that I could see it, in 1980s, I saw institutionalized racism in the early 1980s in Baptist Theological College. All the colored and black students had scholarships and none of them had to work. I don't know about other white students, but most of us had some jobs. And I had a 6 day a week, 8 hour a night job at the fire brigade, and I worked consistently 6 days a week, 8 hours a night, and did a full course of college. Now, because I had to fund my way through college, because I was white, and apartheid South Africa discriminated against whites. Whites had to pay the taxes, whites were conscripted to the army, and blacks got everything free, and they got all the, especially in the church event, certainly on the theological colleges, they got all the subsidies, they got all the scholarships, they got everything. I remember at one point going to the principal, because I worked very hard at my assignments, and they were typed out in display folders, well presented, and I saw some of the dog's breakfast that some other people scrawled out and gave in some scruffy way. And, you know, when I see I'm getting 87% and this person's getting 60-something and everything, you've got to be kidding. So I asked the principal, do you mark us according to the same standard? And he said, oh, no. No, we can't do that. Dr. Theo Pass was the principal. He said, I mark students according to the potential of what I think they're capable of. So if I think you're doing, so I said, does 87% mean I'm working to 87% of what you think my capacity is? He says, yes. When you give so-and-so 64%, that means that's the percentage of... So there's not an objective standard. He said, no. Which was a bit horrifying. Now, at that time, I had the highest respect for nurses. Because nurses, my mother's a nurse, and all the nurses I knew were super efficient, high standard, and they took no nonsense from anyone. And I used to donate blood cells regularly, not just blood, but white cells for the people going through leukemia. So I'd go up to UCT regularly, and they'd be spinning off my blood at med school for the white cell patients, people with leukemia. And that would be a 2.5 hour procedure, because all your blood's taken out, goes through a machine, and they take the white cells off, and then comes back in under this arm, you know, cushion over it, and you're basically reading or keeping yourself distracted. And in 2.5 hours, they've taken all the blood out of your body, taken all the white cells out, put it back. But because I've got a healthy body, I'd have replicated those white cells before the end of the day. So not a big problem, but it can save the life of a leukemia patient. One day, I remember walking in there, and now I'm talking about 1984. I walked in, and I saw four black nurses. And I remember having this sort of jump in my heart of, this is not... Calm down, Peter, don't be stupid, they've got the same training. So I sat down, and along came this nurse, and she started to try and get this needle into my vein, and oh, whatever she did, it was not like what I was used to. And my arm was spasming up, and she kept trying to push this needle in, and of course my whole arm is completely rebelling against this. Next thing, she tries the other arm, so I'm in absolute agony, and after a while, with tears rolling down my cheek, I was saying, what are you doing? It's not working, please stop. And she flung the needle on the floor and stormed out with a huff. And then my blood was squirting on both sides and didn't have so much as a bit of cotton wool or plaster to stop it. I'm trying to... Next comes another nurse. She picks up the needle off the ground and tries to try and stick this in. And I'm in such agony, and I had three more around me, and all they've got all these different colours. They're nursing sisters. They've got, you know, the green and the yellow and the black and all that. They're meant to be the same as, I know what these nursing symbols, they're fully trained nursing sisters. And when I finally just pleaded to them to stop, I mean, there's no way you would have got a needle in by that stage. They just turned their back on me and walked. There was no, I'm sorry, there's no thank you, there was no tea, there was no plaster or anything like that. In fact, I went over and got some of the cotton wool and got some tape to kind of stop the bleeding, and limped out and tried to ride my motorbike. But that was my first experience of affirmative action back in 1984. That's 4 years before apartheid died, apparently. We had counter-apartheid, anti-apartheid, way back. I think back in 75, Sea Point opened up the pools, all races. I think Sea Point opened up the buses already back in 76 or so. The Navy already had multiracial in 74. The Army certainly was fully integrated, same uniform, same wage packages, rank structures by 1980. When I was in the Army, we had times when we had colored or black officers or NCOs who would be giving us orders because we were integrated in some operations on the board, and some chaps from 3-2 battalion or whatever were there, and they'd be giving orders. And I remember times we were working along and the Cape Corps were there and their officers would give us orders. So this business of this apartheid army was actually a myth already by 1980. It wasn't an apartheid army. We were already integrated, all races fighting against communism on the other side. And on the other side, we were not just fighting black terrorists. We were being strafed and shot up by East German, Russian and Cuban helicopter gunships and MiGs as well, and coming under artillery barrages by Russians and East Germans. So there were whites and blacks on the other side, and there were all racism on our side. Not to mention they also had Vietnamese and North Koreans also on their side. I know we came across evidence of that in some of the raids. So there's a lot of things that undermine this nice, easy picture of there were blacks on the side and whites on that side, and the whites were all evil and the blacks were all good. That story just doesn't wash with any of the experience we've got there. So when they're talking about the policy of preference to black students, I know that UCT has had this policy of preference to black students already back to the 80s. I know that. This is not a new policy that started last year. Max Price didn't start this. This has been going on at UCT for a very long time. However, as Max Price pointed out, UCT has 27,000 students, but only 6,600 beds available for on-campus accommodation. So obviously not every student can be accommodated on campus, and they tell them that, and it's in their application forms. By the way, this dear lady, after whom Fuller Hall is named, whose statue is being desecrated, she's the first female student on UCT, and she organized the first female accommodation on campus, which, considering that's their complaint, makes you wonder why her statue and college name had to be attacked. Our difficulty in finding accommodation, the Chancellor said, has largely been aggravated by the Roads Must Fall protests, because they invaded and shut down our residence offices for 3 days during last week, and this created additional complications. Well, I'd imagine it would. When you've got these people creating such major chaos that creates tremendous hygiene problems that they've got to source out to hygiene units to come and clean up the mess after them, when they're creating such security problems that they've got to add at UCT a 2 million rand security bill now, additional, which doesn't seem to be doing their job anyway. They weren't doing anything to protect the paintings or the students on campus on Tuesday last week, that's for sure. Then to say we need the fees to fall while we're increasing the costs, and we need you to provide more beds while we're preventing your staff from even being able to do their job. So do these rioters and students really think that their protests are helping? No, they can't be that stupid. They're intentionally trying to interfere with the workings of this university. Who could possibly benefit from this irrational disruption of studies and traffic? The image of the University of Cape Town was severely damaged last year by the Roads Must Fall campaign, when excrement was thrown at the statue of the founder of UCT, Cecil John Rhodes' monument. Now, I must say, last year I was standing on campus waiting for a photo op. Our trailer with a pro-life message was about to pass by, and I wanted to get a picture of it at the bottom of the Jamison steps. So while standing there, I was asking students passing by, do you know whose statue this is? And no, didn't find anyone who knew that that was Cecil Rhodes' statue. So February the 1st, last year, nobody walking by knew whose statue that was, but somehow a month or so later, they couldn't study there because this was such a grievous affront to them all. So well, after weeks of disruptions, the monument's removed. The foolishness of thinking that removing a national monument could do anything to improve studies, economics, or the life of anybody is apparently missed. I mean, how pointless. We are dealing with some serious problems in this country, like crime, blackouts, corruption, incompetence on colossal scale. How the politicians must laugh when they can turn the mindless masses into attacking some statue of someone who's been dead a century distraction from what they're doing now. If somebody wants to pick your pocket, what's the first thing they've got to do? Distract you. And so politicians are always seeking for distractions while they pick your pockets. What the protest did succeed in doing was disrupting studies and bringing the university into disrepute. There was a time when University of Cape Town was respected. A degree from the University of Cape Town used to be respected. That is long gone. Those who manage to complete their studies will find their degrees devalued in the eyes of any potential employers because of the foolish and destructive actions tolerated or rewarded on campus. As an employer myself, let me tell you, if somebody comes along and presents me with a University of Cape Town degree, it should be a sign for me to say next, please. Because why would I want to employ someone who comes from such a disreputable institution? I don't want troublemakers who've been majoring on how to destroy monuments and how to disrupt studies. You want people to have a work ethic. And I think all over the world, people will be thinking like this, like, University of Cape Town, you've got to be kidding. It used to be one of the most respected universities in the world. Now it is not even a Mickey Mouse type degree. But even more than that, reports and pictures of the hysterical protesters and mindless destruction taking place on what's meant to be an institute for higher learning. This would be bad if a preschool was doing this. But for a university to be doing this, it's absolutely inexcusable. This has undermined investor confidence in our country. I know for a fact that there are investors who, because of the unrest, violence, disruptions, are saying this country is not worth investing in, and they're pulling out. And so we're losing investor confidence. It has caused many tourists to cancel visiting our city and country. Now, tourism is a huge part of our country's income, and especially of Cape Town. There are people, when they see violence and they see Cape Town, a lot of them, their relatives contact them and say, you can't go to Cape Town. I know this because we've regularly had people coming to our Great Commission courses even. Contacting to find out, is it still safe to come, because they saw the news and they saw these sort of things going on in Cape Town, their families all concerned. And we have had people cancel coming here because of violence that was reported internationally. So I know every hotel in town must know what it is to get cancellations after you have things like this coming on the news. And the currency is getting devalued. I think some people have noticed. We've gone down. It's now something like 24 rand to the pound, 18 or 19 rand to the euro, 16 or 17 rand to the dollar.
21.
Sorry?
21.
Oh. Is that what it is today? I saw it hit 24 last week. So it's gone, well, of course, the pound and the dollar's probably going down too, and I know the euro's been going down, but apparently the rand's been going down faster. And remember, there was a time when the rand was called the richest piece of real estate on earth, the Vlodish rand, after which the rand is named. That's what British Parliament called it. When I first travelled overseas, I managed to go for 10 weeks, two continents across Germany, Britain, America, even behind the Iron Curtain, for 1,000 rand. 1988 money. And the rand was pretty much equal to the dollar at that stage. To think now that our money is Mickey Mouse currency. And this is all thanks to Nelson Mandela, bear in mind. Because when he took over, it was about 2 rand to the dollar. The investor confidence is disastrous. So those students who do manage to complete their studies despite the disruptions will find they've got a devalued degree from a discredited institution and much less jobs available. And those few who manage to get a job will find that the money that they earn at the end of the month is going to be worth a lot less than it did when they began their studies. I mean, that's just the fact. These rioters are stealing from everybody. They're not just stealing from students and taxpayers. They're stealing from everybody. Now, you might recall this poster. I remember this poster. Vote ANC for free quality education, a better life for all. Life, a better life for all. Yeah. So they did offer free education, but I mean, there's nothing free in the world. Everything's got to be paid for. And quality education? Are they kidding? They even, Ministry of Education says we've got better education under apartheid. They even say that. Minister of Education even says that. Education, I don't know if they can even spell it, but I don't think they understand. Education means thinking critically, not indoctrination. However, it's unlikely that most of these hysterical protesters on UCT campus are aware of any of these economic realities. Thugs like this should not who can dance on beautiful wooden tables like this should not be allowed into a preschool, let alone a university. That they're merely pawns in a cheap political move may be the furthest thing from their minds. But throwing excrement at statues, blocking traffic, covering monuments with black rubbish bags, burning priceless, irreplaceable works of art, are not only meaningless and ultimately destructive gestures that will do absolutely nothing to improve the life or education of anybody, but it's a terrible waste of time and energy. I mean, what is this foolish individual think he's doing? Does he really think this means anything in the scheme of anything? What has he achieved? Well, you can be sure he hasn't been doing anything for studies. And this isn't going to bother Queen Victoria any bit at all. But to have attacked even the horse monument in Port Elizabeth, absolutely outrageous, in memory of the horses that died in the Anglo-Boer War, why would you attack that? Especially an institution which should be dedicated to furthering education, improving job prospects, and encouraging investments in our country. This has become a drain on our society. I remember people speaking about Sodom on the hillside, Gomorrah on the hillside, and Moscow on the hill. Well, UCT is becoming all that and worse. Protesting against injustice and wickedness is biblical, but damage to property and violence is never biblical. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. And you remember last year when the ANC had the 103rd anniversary in the Greenpoint Stadium and President Zuma called for making the Cape ungovernable. And straight off that, we got over 164 fires, started wildfires, which the fire brigade said was certainly arson, including the Rondebosch Common twice. And we got thousands of hectares, over 6,000 hectares of forestry reserve around Cape Town burned by these arsonists. And most don't even know what they're writing about. The Bible records in the city of Ephesus, Acts 19, where the people had no idea what they were actually writing about. And they were all full of wrath. So the whole city was in confusion and rushed. And some of them cried one thing and others another. For the assembly was confused. Most of them did not know why they'd come together. Well, as somebody who's sometimes gone on the streets and talked to these people, I found out the average writer can't actually articulate what they're writing about either. For the city clerk concluded, we are in danger of being called into question for today's uproar. There being no reason that we may give to account for this disorderly gathering. And that's so today too. A lot of what is going on doesn't make any sense. Let's just understand this. Black people say, we're not getting enough housing. So their solution, burn down the housing projects, which have been doing that. We don't have enough transport, so the solution is burn the buses. There's not enough sanitation in the township, so let's destroy the toilets that have been provided. We don't have enough jobs, so let's burn down the businesses. There's something wrong with the education, so we burn down the schools. Now, am I missing something, or is there something wired into their race that they cannot see that what they're doing is counterproductive? When in history have people thought that you improve things by destroying it? But nearly 500 years ago, the great German reformer Martin Luther said, I'm much afraid that schools will prove to be wide gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not constantly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt. The University of Cape Town has evidently strayed far from its founding principles. From the Rhodes Must Fall campaign to the queer revolution's vitriolic attacks on student representative, council leader, the vice president of the SRC, Zipo Pay, to the Fees Must Fall protest, the orchestrated chaos, and now these riots and destruction of property on UCT. It's evident that UCT has failed. They have failed to diligently explain the Holy Scriptures and to engrave them in the hearts of their students. Therefore, the institution as a whole has become corrupt. It has become corrupt. When Max Price's own son could get arrested last year for attacking property, when the Chancellor's own son's involved in demonstrations to the point of damaging property, then plainly UCT has become a wide gate to hell. The faculty of UCT have tended to promote evolutionism, the idea that order grows out of chaos, from mud to monkeys to man. Some kind of cosmic explosion, a big bang led to the universe around us. Therefore, it's only logical that this has led to social Darwinism, where communists believe that if you throw enough bombs and if you burn enough things down, you create enough explosions, order, social utopia, the workers' paradise will arise out of the ashes. Doesn't it make sense? Well, I mean, if everything you can see around you came from a big bang, then let's make a few more big bangs and more good things will come out of it. James 3 says, but if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exists, confusion and every vile thing are there. I would like to say that all the students doing the writing are pagans. Certainly many are. But statistically we know that many of them will be church-going, nominal Christians at least. But sadly, probably some come from dedicated Christian homes. Some might even call themselves evangelicals. We might even have some amongst them who would call themselves born-again Christians. For example, Zizi, who got attacked so brutally by the queer revolution for her innocent posting, "We're normalizing sin," she admits that she was part of the Rhodes Must Fall gang. And the same people who she was with to attack the monument turned on her. And this is part of the problem. There are people who, for one reason or another, get caught up with it. It's peer pressure or whatever. And you hear a lot of people saying, oh, you know, the students have a point, and you know, there's a lot. Well, they might have a point. There might be a whole lot of points. But damage to property is crossing the line. I've organized a lot of demonstrations. I could say I've organized at least 100 demonstrations in my life, probably more. The biggest demonstration I've ever seen in Cape Town, 30,000 people, 1995. We marched upon. We didn't break one window. We didn't attack one person. We didn't leave even litter behind. On a mark of honor, we left the place as clean as we found it, or better. In fact, we picked up litter. So we've marched how many times to Parliament? In fact, it was funny. The first time we marched to Parliament on the first legalization of abortion anniversary and 1st of February march, there were armored cars blocking the way to the... There was the riot police with their shields, helmets. I thought, boy, have they not done their homework. And the next year we didn't even have any police. There's just the traffic policeman on a motorbike. Because they should know Christian Action doesn't damage anything. We've made our demonstrations. When they try to close down the Christian radio stations, we marched 10,000 people to Parliament. We didn't damage a thing. And they changed their mind quickly and said, no, we won't close down the Christian radio stations. When they tried to close down Christian private schools, we marched also a huge amount to Parliament. Several thousand. No damage of anything. And this is the way we operate. But if the EFF ever march, or if the ANC Youth League ever march, there's always going to be damage. And some poor mind-your-own-business salesperson on the side of the road or vendor is going to have their stall looted and a whole lot of things smashed. Why? There's nothing wrong with demonstrating. But nothing justifies damaging people's property. And those Christians who are part of it, and there are Christians who are part of it, we need to remind them that they are not dealing with a wisdom that comes from above. They're dealing with an earthly, sensual, demonic. Self-seeking, envy, confusion, all these things. God is not the author of confusion. And if these people are following in these movements, they must know that they've been deceived by the devil. Now, of course, you must also recognize, amidst all this world war of worldviews, that communists believe in what Vladimir Lenin called constructive chaos. Notice, they were always promising integration means better schools for all. I mean, what a lie on every level, in every country, every time. Lenin declared that evolution leads to revolution. He also taught that communists must create conflict, class warfare, race warfare, whatever's necessary, youth against the elders, whatever. Whatever it takes, just you've got to create conflict. Break down existing structures, provide fertile ground for revolution and restructuring of all of life around the Communist Party, leading to the dictatorship of the proletariat. That's the goal. If you say, but this doesn't make any sense, it doesn't make any sense if you're a Christian. But if you're a communist, it makes a lot of sense. If you're a communist and if you believe in evolution and you believe in social Darwinism, then what's going on makes a lot of sense. Chaos for chaos' sake. Breaking down the system. Organizing strife. You don't have to believe in it. Do you know the first big riots organized by the Southern Communist Party, 1924 was it, on the Rand? What was the slogan? Workers of the world unite for a white South Africa. They were protesting against blacks being allowed to work in their jobs in the mines. So the Southern Communist Party is working on a whites-only policy. Later, they're working against the whites. It doesn't. They don't care about the whites or the blacks. They will use any fool who is willing to march for their cause against their own best interests. It's what Lenin called useful idiots. The white Labour Party were the useful idiots in the 1920s here, and the black labour unions were the useful idiots in the 1990s. It doesn't make any difference then. They couldn't care two hoots about any of us. Now, our mission is continue to conduct outreaches on the campuses, ministering to students, literature evangelism, film evangelism, personal one-on-one evangelism, using evangelism explosion, wear the master, to bring students to Christ. And we've also engaged in debates on campus, such as on the blasphemy debate, open-air preaching. Always been going there regularly, and I see you post some good things today as well. So please continue to pray for our mission workers, particularly Aubrey and Taryn and Francis, as they go up onto the campus and seek to minister to these students, try to be salt and light in a decaying environment. They've identified 8 Christian societies on campus, which we're trying to supply with good materials, make them more effective. It's got to be very intimidating for them to want to just merge into the background. To make a stand at a time like this takes courage. Statistically, 75% of young people from Christian homes enroll at university stop attending church within 4 years. 75%. That's not a defeat. That's a catastrophic disaster. That's a massacre. So evidently, most churches, most youth groups, and most Christian homes are failing to adequately prepare their young people to understand the times, to know what they believe, to know why they believe it, and to know how to defend an argument against those who are the intractable enemies of the faith. The average Christian, when they go onto campus, is bewildered when they suddenly hear people who don't believe in creation or who advocate abortion or same-sex marriages, and many of them are just wide-eyed and they don't know what to say. Nobody prepared them for it. They didn't have debates. They didn't have lectures. It's not that they didn't want to hear. Most churches didn't want to deal with the issues. Few Christians who go onto campus are prepared to engage in the spiritual warfare and academic debates with situation ethics, radical feminism, the gay GB, pink inquisition, conform or die, socialist economics, revisionist Marxist history, secular humanist atheism, existential philosophy, and blind anti-Christian prejudice like Zizi experienced last year on campus for one innocent, one-sentence Facebook comment. Hatred which predominates in all too many campuses. And now you can see the Afrikaans must die and the hatred for whites on campuses all over the country exploding. Many are gambling with their son or daughter's faith and future. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and on the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. So there's some excellent films we've got to recommend that Christian families should be showing at home, that churches should be showing, that Christian schools should be showing, that youth groups should be showing, like God's Not Dead, Audacity, Evolution vs. God. These are excellent to prepare people for the kind of clashes you are going to come across on campus. The Final Frontier is an excellent evangelistic film. Dr. James Kennedy said studying David Noble's book, Understand the Times, would be worth more than a college degree. But most churches have never looked at worldviews and looked at philosophy and history and education, economics in the light of the scriptures, or critiqued New Age, secular humanist, Marxist, or Muslim worldviews from a biblical point of view. Some of the textbooks I've written for this World War of Worldviews, which have been textbooks for biblical worldview summits and seminars, are the Biblical Principles for Africa, Answering Skeptics, and Biblical Worldview Manual, and most importantly in my mind, Victorious Christians Have Changed the World. Because guilt manipulation is a key thing. They attack every one of our heroes or ignore them. And they're continually lifting up Marxist mass murderers as the idols of our time to respect. And we've got to know our history, and we've got to also know how to debunk their history and answer their skeptical comments. We've also produced a whole series of audio box sets based on a lot of Reformation Society lectures like Answering Skeptics, War Against God, Understanding History, South African History, Biblical Worldview Summit. If we don't want our sons and daughters to be conformed to the world, but to be effective Christian witnesses at school or on campus, then we must ensure they're thoroughly grounded in practical discipleship, biblical worldview, Christian apologetics, knowing how to answer skeptics, how to put feet to their faith. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. George Orwell said, the most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of the history. They have been stealing our history in South Africa, not just damaging our monuments, but changing the textbooks and brainwashing children and trying to give people a completely altered state of consciousness of the reality. Aristotle said, tolerance and apathy are the last virtues of a dying society. You see this in American Europe, where all they've got left is tolerance. They've got no other virtues. Tolerance is being used as a device to introduce a new law system as a prelude to a new intolerance. They use tolerance to destroy tolerance. And this is the face of black racism against whites in this country now. The most racist people are the ones crying racist all the time. Only biblical Christianity offers a rational basis for opposing racism and for pursuing justice. Equality before the law is a biblical principle. King Alfred called it the common law because it's common for all, no matter what your class or race or gender. The community is to have the same rules for you and for the alien living amongst you. This is a lasting order for the generations to come. You and the alien or the foreigner are to be the same before the Lord. The same laws and the same regulations apply to both you and the alien living amongst you. So Numbers 15:15 says you can't have one law for you and another law for the aliens. The same law's got to apply for both. Do not pervert justice, we read in Leviticus 19:15. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly. Fairness is not even a consideration right now in this country. There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are one in Christ Jesus. Now this verse in Galatians 3:28 has been abused. We're not saying here that males can enter female bathrooms, as the transgender is doing. We're not saying there's no distinctions between male and female, slave or free, or Jew or Greek. The Bible makes clear there are distinctions, but it means there's only one way of salvation for all. In Christ we are one. But it doesn't mean that our distinctives and our callings and our duties may not be different. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility. Ephesians 2:14. For from one man he made every nation of men. The common ancestry through Adam and Eve of all races shows we have a common judge that we're answerable to. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. And I experienced that. When I was converted, everything changed. Everything. My upbringing meant far less to me than my identity in Christ, what the Bible taught, and my discipleship road. And so I suddenly found myself having a completely different relationship with so many people who I would have regarded differently before. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting men's sins against them, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. So 2 Corinthians 5 is giving us this message, but first of all it's reconciliation between God and man, and then secondly between man and man. If we're not right with God, we're not going to be right with our neighbor. What is the greatest command? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. This has always been the golden rule for Christians. Before the coming of Christ, the heathen nations despised honest work. They consigned it to slaves. When Christ was born, half of the population of the Roman Empire were slaves. Three quarters of Athens were slaves. But Jesus revolutionized labor. When he took up the axe and the saw and the hammer and the plane, Jesus endued labor with a new dignity. And Christianity undercuts slavery by giving dignity to work. Work wasn't something we avoided. We rejoiced in doing our work. And by reforming work, Christianity transformed the entire social order, especially with the Protestant work ethic. Our Lord Jesus Christ began his ministry in Nazareth with these words, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and release to the captives." When the Apostle Paul wrote to Philemon concerning his escaped slave, he urged him to welcome back Onesimus, no longer as a slave, but as a dear brother, as a man, as a brother in the Lord. Revolutionary words for that time. Because of these and many other scriptural commands to love our neighbor, to be good Samaritans, to do to others what we want them to do for you, Christians like St. Patrick, William Wilberforce, John Newton, William Carey, David Livingstone, Lord Shaftesbury, General Charles Gordon, and so many others worked tirelessly to fight the slave trade, to end the slave trade, to stop child slave labor, to set captives free. Amongst all the religions of the world, only Christianity brought an end to slavery. Every culture, every religion, every country was engaged in slavery. Only Christianity ended. And yet today, it's where Christianity invented slavery. Today, there are 27 million slaves in the world. 14 million of them are black. And they're almost all owned by Muslims. But who wants to talk about that? Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. We need to know the story of Amazing Grace and of William Wilberforce and the fight against the slave trade and what the Royal Navy did to end the slave trade. And that's why I wrote the book Slavery, Terrorism, Islam, which got me death threat fatwas 10 years ago. And we've doubled and trebled it since because it's, if they're going to appreciate that much, we'll put more effort into it. But the Muslims are still enslaving black people, as Mendr Nazir, a young teenager kidnapped in the Nubian Mountains, was able to testify after her master took her to London when he worked in the embassy in the Khartoum, the Sudan embassy in London. And she escaped and got protection and now has published a book. On the other hand, those who hold to Darwin's theory of evolution have no objective basis with which to counter racism, do they? In fact, Darwinian evolution has inspired a whole host of racist ideologies and movements, including communism. The actual title of Darwin's famous evolutionary book is On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in a Struggle for Life. Charles Darwin said that, of course, Australians must exterminate the Aborigines for the purpose of evolution because the Aborigines are frozen at such prehistoric levels. What good is it? The advanced races should exterminate the primitive races. He advocated that as just a matter of course without any dissenting concern from his evolutionary friends. Karl Marx wanted to dedicate Das Kapital to Charles Darwin. He wrote, Darwin's book is very important and it serves me as a basis in natural sciences for the historic class struggle, social Darwinism. Violence is the midwife, they said. As Lenin and Stalin so succinctly put it, evolution leads to revolution. You see, through death and destruction comes life. And so wars and revolutions and exterminations are excellent. It's just helping evolution of man. Preservation of favored races. Both Darwin and Marx expressed the most extreme racist views. It's ironic because so many Russians and Africans hold Marxist beliefs because Marx himself despised the Slavs and the blacks, writing that they were frozen at pre-civilization levels and would never make any contribution to history. Now, you think of the amount of black Marxists out there like Malema and Mugabe. Do they not know what Karl Marx thought of them? If they call themselves Marxists. This is documented by Karl Marx the Racist, Understand the Times by David Noble, Marx and Satan by Richard Wilmot. And that's an interesting one, showing how Karl Marx was a Satanist, very definitely. I've got the tracts outside if you're interested in the summary, the heart and soul of Karl Marx. They promise them freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity. The Oxford English Dictionary defines racism as discrimination against or antagonism towards other races. Idi Amin, who was chaired and hailed as the chairman of the Organization of African Unity and given standing ovations, he was the Mugabe of his time, destroyed his country, killed 650,000 people, most of them Christians. He shot the Archbishop of the Anglican Church in the head and ate his heart, liver and brains, mind you. Idi Amin was the hero of all black independent countries at that time. He also chased out all Indians out of his country and things like this. He's complete racist in every level. But how many people think of Idi Amin when they think of racist? Yet many who speak out vitriolically against racism are themselves racist, displaying intense antagonism towards people of other races and advocating policies which discriminate on the basis of race, like Robert Mugabe. Now, there are many who would claim to respect Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but they're not willing to live by his maxim, which he claimed was that his children will not be judged by the color of the skin, but by the content of the character. Now, whatever we think of MLK, we know he's a plagiarist and a serial adulterer and all that, but just this quote, this is meant to be his maxim, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Is that what drives black economic empowerment and affirmative action? job reservation and all that. Frustrated people easily given to character conditioned hate. The easiest thing to sell someone is that they're better than someone else. The Holocaust in Rwanda, where mobs of Hutus slaughtered over 800,000 Tutsi Christians, is just one example of the destructive power of tribalism in Africa today. More people were killed with machetes in 6 weeks in Rwanda than have been killed by nuclear weapons in all of history. Think about that. But I should also point out to you that right now, the Tutsi minority who were meant to be exterminated in the Rwandan Holocaust have been running Rwanda for the last 21 years. Why? Because bullies are cowards. And when the Tutsi rose up to fight, even though they were only 10% of the population, they took the country and they've been running it since, because nobody questions that the Hutu have lost all credibility to run a country after having taken part in such cold-blooded mass murder. And so as a result, the Tutsi minority are running the country. And I think those people who are talking about exterminating the whites in South Africa should look at Rwanda, because the whites in South Africa have a far better military track record and a far better arm than the Tutsi were in Rwanda. And they can find David can take down Goliath much faster than they would have expected if the Lord's on their side. H.G. Wells noted that racism justifies and holds together more baseness, cruelty and abomination than any other sort of error in the world. What kind of person wears a kill all whites t-shirt and tries to justify mass murder? And by the way, how many whites have been murdered in South Africa since Mandela became president 21 years ago? Over 85,000 whites, including over 3,000 farmers. And not just killed, in many cases tortured to death. Many people say we are in stage 6 of genocide in this country. They've been whipping it up, they've been demonizing, they've been dehumanizing, they've been mobilizing against, they're legally discriminating against, they are slandering, they're whipping up, they're even dancing in the streets and singing, bring me my machine gun, kill a Boer, kill a farmer, which is done even by the president of the country, has been done. That is where they were in Rwanda. They were demonizing the Tutsi, dehumanizing the Tutsi, discriminating against Tutsi, singing against the Tutsi, and finally, when they mobilized, the people just ready to go and kill their neighbors. Now, Professor Noel Igniter in Harvard Magazine wrote, "The goal of abolishing the white race is on the face of it so desirable that some may find hard to believe that it could find any opposition. Make no mistake, we intend to keep on bashing the dead white males and the live ones and the females too, until a social construct known as the white race is destroyed." This is a man who in Harvard Magazine, which is not exactly a insignificant publication. This professor, Noel Igniter, "We must destroy the white race." And then he said, "I would like to put the white males in concentration camps. When they're all dead, we can throw a party and dance around their corpses." Now, bearing in mind what's happened in the 20th century in the Gulag Archipelago, as documented by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the killing of about 66 million Christians in the Soviet Union and the satellite states of the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, in the 20th century. To talk about putting hordes of people into concentration camps, till they're all dead, I mean, dancing on their corpses. But that's what agenda documents is indeed their plan. One person described racism as the maximum of hatred for the minimum of reasons. I mean, what actually have we done wrong to them? After all, what did the whites do to Africa? Ended into tribal genocide, ended cannibalism, brought the wheel, medicine, trebled people's life expectancies, ended famine, brought advanced farming methods, brought the gospel, built schools, roads, railways, hospitals, and you could carry on. And how many whites dedicate themselves adopting black children who can't be adopted by their own people, apparently, getting out there, people like me who've risked their lives who knows how many times and fought with who knows how much rubbish and been abused in so many different ways in order to help them. And then somebody comes along with killer whites, killer farmers, and a whole lot of these people who benefited from it are dancing just like those people who Jesus healed and fed, going from Hosanna on Palm Sunday to crucify him just a few days later. How many of those people had relatives or themselves have been healed by Christ or fed by Christ who could suddenly start screaming? What have the whites done to deserve this kind of hatred? It's disturbing how many African leaders, while ostensibly opposing racism, support one of the most vitriolic racists on the continent today, Robert Mugabe. And I've challenged ANC people in Parliament at one of their subcommittees on this very point. despite Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe being guilty of some of the most vicious racism, with a disastrous policy of state-sponsored terrorism, the stealing and looting of farms and businesses, the murder of farmers and opposition leaders, and the terrorizing of Supreme Court justices who Mugabe threatened their lives on TV, the bombing of opposition newspaper offices like the Daily News, imprisoning of critics, relentless promotion of racial hatred against whites, the ANC governor of South Africa steadfastly refuses to criticize Mugabe. The crisis in Zimbabwe is still severe. People are dying of starvation and have been for the last 15 years in a man-made famine orchestrated by the ZANU-PF Marxist government of Robert Mugabe. Thousands of productive farms, over 5,000 productive farms seized by the government organized mobs. Vast herds of cattle and wildlife slaughtered. Crops and stores burned, farmhouses looted, many people murdered. One of the most productive agricultural economies in Africa has been systematically destroyed because of fanatical racial hatred. Not only did these farms feed the entire nation, but they exported food, providing the highest percentage of foreign exchange earnings. These commercial farms are the largest employers of labor in the whole of Zimbabwe, and they provide homes to over 4 million farm workers and their dependents. When the last Prime Minister of Rhodesia, Ian Smith, wrote The Bitter Harvest, The Bitter Harvest was just beginning to come in. It's become a lot worse since. The dreadful aftermath of the Great Betrayal. Yet the President of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, needing a scapegoat for his failed socialism, played the race card. Never leave home without the race card. And he plays the race card and he declares farmers are enemies of the people. We have degrees in violence. You have degrees in agriculture. I have a degree in violence. Indeed, he studied in Red China, learning how to execute peasants with their hands tied behind the back of wire. Those farmers who resist will die, he said. During the presidential elections in Zimbabwe, thousands of MDC election observers and supporters have been arrested in massive nationwide clampdowns on the opposition. Human rights groups have documented hundreds of thousands of cases of human rights abuse, like the breaking of the arms of people for having voted for the opposition. Don't you understand what freedom is? Freedom is the freedom to vote for the dictator, not to vote for the opposition. And they break people's arms and legs for that. And then, of course, severe beatings, abductions, torture, murder. Routine. Hundreds of thousands of documented cases. And yet, ZANU-PF officials, supporters, war veterans, youth militia have rampaged throughout residential areas, attacking people indiscriminately, beating street vendors, dragging white farmers from their cars, savagely beating and murdering many people. Yet incredibly, although almost every observer condemned all of these elections as shams, fraudulent, incredibly, the African National Congress Governor of South Africa have repeatedly expressed their warm congratulations to Robert Mugabe for convincing majority wins. I mean, if it wasn't so balakalik, you would laugh, but this is it's not actually funny. Even when they strut around like goons wearing these stupid ribbons and medals. What? This man never heard a shot fired in anger. He has never done any combat. Where did he get those medals from? He's never fought in any war. He's never been in a war zone. Many condemned the ANC's obscene haste to declare the polls legitimate even before the reports had come in. The ANC's totally destroyed any credibility, and I've said it to them in Parliament. How can you ever talk about apartheid and racism when you support the worst racism in the continent, in history? Robert Mugabe commits worst atrocities every day, 1,000 times worse than in the entire time of war under Ian Smith. And you know it. 1,000 times worse, daily. And you support it. And they just looked down and laughed. Yes, they knew. I mean, they couldn't answer. They knew I was right. When the head of the South African Observer Commission declared that the elections were legitimate and brushed aside the widespread murder, violence, abduction, torture of observers, massive irregularities, he was jeered by the journalists and the diplomats alike. And let me tell you, the journalists are a very liberal crowd. And the diplomats are generally very liberal. For them to be saying this is ridiculous, it's got to be very blatant and bad. And by the way, you notice we've got a moratorium on ivory hunting. And yet this man can sit on an ivory throne with ivory things at a time when elephants are an endangered animal in this continent. When questioned about the disenfranchisement of hundreds of thousands of voters in Zimbabwe, the ANC official dismissed it as an administrative oversight. Journalists laughed out loud and walked out in disgust. Whoever says to the guilty you are innocent, peoples will curse him and nations will denounce him. It's evident that this blind support for Mugabe is inspired in large part by racial prejudice. That's what it is. Racial prejudice. Did you see a report that went out just this last week by ex-president Thabo Mbeki? It said we must continue to stand by Mugabe, and we do continue to stand by Mugabe, and he defends that he stood by Mugabe all those years when he was president because Mugabe delayed his farm invasions till after the ANC had consolidated its control over South Africa. Otherwise, the whites would never have handed over the country to them. Now, I know this. He said this before. It's not the first time he said it, but he said again this last week. Despite Mugabe engineering one of the most spectacular economic collapses in history with a world record in inflation, went to the trillions of percent inflation, where a $100 trillion note was worth nothing. Couldn't even buy a loaf of bread. With his national suicide of Zimbabwe, all too many black political leaders support him, and still support him. I've had people coming to our camps, putting, which leader do you most respect? And I've had some black Christians writing in Robert Mugabe. Thabo Mbeki. Literally. Christians. Irrespective of the lawlessness and savagery afflicting the population of Zimbabwe, the racism and hypocrisy has been evident at world events like the UN World Summit on Sustainable Development hosted in South Africa. Even while Mugabe's supporters were slaughtering endangered wildlife, destroying whole forests and game reserves in Zimbabwe, Mugabe was being applauded, standing ovation, as a keynote speaker at the World Summit on Sustainable Development. How on earth can you have him talking about sustainable development? Some of the greatest game reserves in Africa have been in Zimbabwe, like Mana Pools and Wanki. Now, many of these wildlife sanctuaries are scenes of unprecedented slaughter. Along with wholesale poaching, Marxist mobs have been engaged in wholesale theft, abductions, and murders. Properties have been burned out. Tourists have been chased out of safari camps. Game rangers have been assaulted or even killed. How long will the land lie parched and the grass in every field be withered because those who live in it are wicked, the animals and the birds have perished? Under Mugabe, even judges have been assaulted by mobs in their chambers and court. Journalists and editors have been arrested and tortured. Pastors have been arrested for praying for peace and justice, and the only independent daily newspaper and radio stations while we were blown up, while the police stood by laughing. Destructive force at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. How can anyone in the ANC ever again speak against racial discrimination of apartheid South Africa? Let me say, we would love for this government to treat us as the white apartheid National Party used to treat them. Give us our own homeland. Give us our own areas. And we would be delighted. We won't mind. We wouldn't complain. That would be an improvement in what we've got right now. When they've instituted their own racial discrimination through black economic empowerment racial quotas. My daughters were born under apartheid, but their race is not mentioned in the birth certificate. Born 1991, 1993. My boys were born free under Mandela. Their race is mentioned in their 1995 and 1999 birth certificates. Why would that be? How is it that we didn't have race in apartheid South Africa, but in the 90s, but we do under colorblind rainbow nation? Because Mandela didn't end apartheid, he brought it back. He brought race classification back into the country for economic empowerment of blacks, BEEE and AAA and all that. Job reservation, affirmative action. And now the smashing of historic monuments, burning of priceless, irreplaceable works of art, singing about killing whites, murdering farmers in torturous ways, and so enthusiastically supportive of Robert Mugabe's vicious racism in Zimbabwe, even saying we should do here what Mugabe's done in Zimbabwe. And they're saying that in cabinet level in Parliament. So, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who are wise in their own eyes, who acquit the guilty for a bribe. You can think how many guilty have been acquitted for a bribe, but deny justice to the innocent. We have a president who once had 150 odd counts of fraud and corruption, and rape charges and whatever else. I can't remember it all. And what happened? He just managed to abolish the scorpions, who'd been trained by the FBI to deal with corruption and changed the national prosecuting attorney so that they dropped all the charge against him, acquit the guilty for a bribe, but deny justice to the innocent, for they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty. It turns out that those people who are screaming racism the most are the worst racists of all. In 1995, 100 rand could fill your trolley with these basic foodstuffs. By 2004, it was much reduced. Today, yay, you could barely fill a plastic bag with what you used to be able to fill a trolley with the same 100 rand. So the joy of ANC, they've stolen from everyone. So the revolutionary new ANC army knife, Kentucky Fried Chicken, of course, Panga AK-47, kill all the whites, box of matches, crowbar, and is this not what they stand for? This is what immigrants to America show of their respect for America. Stand on the flag while raising their own. Well, why didn't they stay in their country? Are you losing the debate? Scream racist and you'll silence the opposition. Thereby, you can end the argument and allow you to claim victory. That's basically the way it works. Is this a racist statement? General Robert E. Lee, a very honorable man, said, "I've always observed that wherever you find the Negro, everything is going down around him. And wherever you find the white man, you see everything around him improving." Well, maybe that was true in the 1960s, but I'm afraid we've got some white savages today who are on drugs and so on, who things are also breaking down around them. So that's not uniformly accurate, but is that a racist comment? What do you think about this comment by Professor Noel Ignatieff, a Jewish professor, who says that his goal is to abolish the white race and to destroy and exterminate the white race? Is that a racist statement? Should all whites be exterminated? Yes, that's what they're saying. What is going on in our schools is systematically teaching, even in our Christian schools. I'm seeing the curriculum. Everything white is bad, everything Christian is bad, everything Protestant is very bad. Communists are great, Muslims are tremendous, all the other religions are top class. But I've even been seeing in Christian school textbooks how the whites brought slavery to Africa. Are you kidding? The name Slav comes from, the slave comes from the Slavs, the people of Eastern Europe. Because that's where the Romans got all their slaves from. People suggesting that slavery, that the Europeans brought slavery to Africa. Africans have done more enslaving of Europeans than it ever was the other way around. Do you know the name of Antonio Gramsci? He's not as famous as Vladimir Lenin, but he should be. He was the head of the Communist Party of Italy, and he said, "We're not going to get the Christian West by violent revolution. Won't work. The civilized world has been thoroughly saturated by Christianity for 2,000 years. Any country founded in Christian values cannot be overthrown until those roots are cut. But to cut the roots, to change the culture, a long march to the institutions of the West, government, religion, education, entertainment, is necessary. Only then will power fall into our laps like ripened fruit." He described our job, we must be like cultural termites. Imagine a wooden building and the cultural termites can eat the way through all the beams and you could put fresh paint on the outside. But one day the whole structure will collapse because you've eaten out the insides of all the beams that are supporting this edifice. He said we must be the cultural termites in this long march through the institutions of the West. Thomas Jefferson said a democracy is nothing more than mob rule where 51% of the people may take away the rights of the other 49%. He said that's why we need a republic, a rule of law, not democracy is not what the reformers or Protestants ever advocate. Remember, it was a democracy that chose Barabbas and tried for Christ to be crucified. Democracies are normally demon crazy. Democracy is not a Christian concept. The mob is always wrong. The mob, the majority, have always wanted, let's go back to Egypt, let's stone Joshua and Caleb for giving the good report. Let's stone Moses. Let's stone Aaron. I mean, this has just been the attitude. God's people have often been wrong. The majority are always wrong. So what does liberal stand for? Laughable, inconsiderate, blaming. It's always someone else's fault. Entitled, race-baiting, anti-capitalist, loudmouths. That's a liberal. A hate crime requires thought police. If you've read 1984, you know what that means. That's why even what you write on your own private Facebook page can be monitored by the thought police. It's a hate crime, thought crime. Being politically correct is like taking a test where you've given all the answers. Neither one requires you to think. Being politically correct, the good thing about being politically correct is you don't have to think. You just know this is the only acceptable answer you can give. What if the history they teach us isn't even close to what really happened? The myth is of this hero Mandela who ended apartheid and instituted a country where never, 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 never again will anyone again be discriminated based on race. But the reality is they were burning town councillors alive. What do you mean town council? You mean black people had the vote? Yes, they voted for their own town councillors, mayors, and for their own parliaments in Transkei, Ciskei. Black people didn't get the vote in 1994. They just shared a common voters' role. Everyone had votes before. That's why the ANC were urging black people to avoid the elections and boycott the elections before, because they didn't want them voting. Rhodesia had a colorblind constitution where anybody could, who met the requirements, educationally wise or property ownership wise, could get the vote. And that was uniformly applied to not every white could vote, not every black could vote. Now, it so happened more whites were qualified to vote at that stage, but the more the blacks in Rhodesia were civilized, educated, the more of them would be in parliament. And when they started off, Ian Smith had half of the parliament was black and half was white. But soon it was an all-white parliament. Why? Not because the whites kicked them out. The Rhodesian Front wanted the blacks in parliament, but ZANU and ZAPU were terrorizing and murdering not only black candidates, but black voters. So after a while, Rhodesia became a whites-only government, not because they wanted it, but because the blacks were intimidating their people not to be a part of it. Do you know what our dear friend Dr. Gautam Buthelezi says? He says Mandela didn't end apartheid. Mandela perpetuated apartheid another 20 to 25 years. If Mandela hadn't started the armed struggle in 1960, we could have seen apartheid ending probably before the end of the 60s, he said. And Gautam Buthelezi says it was the ANC's provocation and violence and terrorism that forced South Africa to clamp down and for survival to try and, first priority is survival and to protect. This was a heyday of communism. Remember, there was the Mau Mau terrorism going on in Kenya. There's the Mau Mau terrorism going on in Kenya, killing whites there. There was the Simba terrorists in Congo. There's all these horrible things going around. And so South Africa was protection of South Africa, suppression of communism, suppression of terrorism acts. And we had all sorts of legislation. And the more they did massacres, like killing all the police at Cato Manor, cooking and eating them before Sharpeville, which was a reaction. Of course, they wanted to provoke reactions. And what Gautam Buthelezi says is Mandela didn't stop apartheid. Mandela perpetuated it for another 2.5 decades. And I think that's quite right. And Carter's position has not been appreciated or repeated in the media because it doesn't fit with the media myth. The media myth is Mandela ended apartheid, whereas actually he didn't. He wasn't promoting any kind of race-blind country. He was promoting a country where communism was the goal. So 12 black teens beat a six-month pregnant white woman to death in Sanford, Florida, and no media attention really. Why would that be? Because if one black thug gets shot, then the whole media is hysterical. Now, this is the way it works in the media. If there's a non-white shooter and a white victim, the narrative is gun control. We need to stop the guns. If a white shooter shoots a non-white, it's racism, and it's because he's got a Confederate flag or an American flag or something. If a non-white kills a non-white, run a story about some scandal. It's not important. If a police officer kills a non-white, it's police brutality. If a non-white shooter kills a police officer, it's a reaction to brutality. If a male kills a female, it's sexism. If a female kills a male, it's a reaction to sexism. If a female shooter kills a female, you need gun control. If a female shoots a fraternity, the solution is ban fraternities. If a non-Muslim shoots a Muslim, it's Islamophobia. If a Muslim kills a non-Muslim, it's a reaction to Islamophobia. If a Muslim kills a Muslim, let's go back to soap operas. Atheist shooter kills a Christian, you need gun control. Terrorist kills an artist, you need sanction. If a terrorist kills a Christian, the Crusades are to blame. Do you understand how the media works? So, you know who Che Guevara is? And by the way, the pastor of the church across the way here, is that right, was putting on a film, were you telling me? Wearing this t-shirt? Were you telling me about this?
No.
Okay. Oh, Daniela was. Daniela said she was at a university event where pastor of this church here was giving some video, and he was wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt trying to promote the church. We must get ready for revolution and so on. Yeah. Who was Che Guevara? Aside from being a dirty, unwashed, mass-murdering thug communist who killed over 4,000 people, including women, children, and teenage girls, he shot dead personally as Fidel Castro's hitman. He burned books, he banned music, he hated Negroes, and he executed homosexuals. But the liberal socialist progressives had adopted him as a symbol of hope and freedom. Makes sense to anybody?
Just around the corner we have a gambling, just like around the corner where we say there's a gambling and a pub club thing. It's like a Havana club. And
oh, yeah.
Also in Stellenbosch, there's also one.
I've seen a few Havana things with a Cuba flag. And yet, why are people by the millions fleeing from Cuba, swimming across shark-infested waters, 90 miles minimum to get to Florida, to escape from workers' paradise if Cuba's so great? So, what goes on is you've got the crowd is screaming about their feelings being hurt, and the rights of others are offensive, we demand you restrict them. And of course there's big business and there's big governments who are very happy to comply. Because do these people realize they're useful idiots? These characters don't care anything about their issue or their feelings, but they're very happy for these fools to give them an excuse to clamp down on people's freedoms. And that's what the Agenda 2 film is documenting. Desmond Tutu, no less an authority than Desmond Tutu, says the ANC today is worse than apartheid. Well, no news to you and I, but it's kind of interesting to have a man like Tutu, who did more than anyone else, in the church at least, to change our previous system and bring about what we've got now. Okay, this, believe it or not, is Joburg, where the streets are paved with gold, apparently. This is an ANC-run administration. If you think that Cape Town's DA administration is bad, you can be glad you don't have the ANC as your municipal authorities right now. Now, these Weight Watchers here are uniting under the sign Nightingale Must Fall. They're campaigning against white dresses. They say it's racist. Actually, why did Nightingale choose white dresses? To show up dirt for hygiene reasons. But now white must go and Nightingale must fall as a new movement amongst nurses. Here are four good reasons against affirmative action. Yeah. If I was to say I voted for George Bush because he's white, I'm white, he's white, and I just want a white president as my president, what would that person be? A racist. So you get these black people. I mean, we've got how many blacks in America who are born again, Bible-believing, tongue-speaking, washed in the blood of the Lamb, name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, pro-life, pro-family, and 96% of all blacks in America vote for Obama. Why? Well, you know, he's black and I'm black and I just like the idea of having a black president. Well, what is that? And this is after they have had how much civil rights and have had how much welfare, and this is 150 years since they got rid of slavery and all that in America, and you've still got these people on the, not just the tribal, but I mean, this is brain dead. I wouldn't vote for Clinton or for F.W. de Klerk or for Lenin or any of these white commie scum, no matter what you paid me. You couldn't threaten my life with enough tortures to make me vote for scum like that. It doesn't matter if they're white. It's just, but what kind of Christian votes for scum like the ANC five times, who kill babies, who lie on everything, who steal, cheat, and destroy everything, devalue the currency, the biggest disaster that's ever happened to this country. I mean, it makes Shaka Zulu and the Difficult look not that bad. And as for Obama, who votes for a narcissist like this, who breaks the world record? I think he had 140 eyes, me's, and myself's in one speech, which is a world record. There's never been a more narcissistic, self-centered idiot who takes selfie pictures of himself at Mandela's funeral, quite aside from in his own White House. I mean, what kind of person does this? What's the worst period in South African history? Well, Anglo-Zulu War, about 6,700 people died. In Anglo-Boer War, 100,000 people were killed. During apartheid, 21,000 were killed in over 40 years, most of them killed by black people between 1990 and 1994. The vast majority, 14,700 died after Mandela was released in a fight between Inkatha and the ANC. You can't blame that one on the whites, but they try to. But even if you want to put all the victims, everything together, even the terrorists we killed across the border in Angola, 21,000 people died in 40-odd years of war, mind you. We have 25,000 people being murdered every year in peace in this country. 1 year under ANC is worse than 44 years of apartheid war, in terms of just the body count. And that's not counting how many babies killed by abortion. So somebody put this up, this man must like H.F. Favut, and this September marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of this president, this Prime Minister, Hendrik Favut. As he said, because we have over 50 murders a day, thank you for proving apartheid rights every day, 50 times a day. And in other words, what he's saying is good fences make good neighbors, what he said. He said, good neighborliness is our policy. And I remember being told by a black man, a black member of parliament, back in 1999, when Slovo died about that time. And Slovo had been Minister of Housing, and this black member of parliament said to me, H.F. Favut built more houses for black people and better than Slovo, Mandela, and all of them had done. And that was after 5 years of the ANC in power, and I thought, that sounds extreme. So I asked a few other people in the know, like Kenneth Mesh and so on, and he said, well, actually, that's true. And H.F. Favut was so concerned to uplift and care for the black people. In fact, he did a lot more to help them. Here's an interesting stat. Well, before we get there, Martin Warburg's just brought out a book called Is South Africa Too Dumb for Democracy? Exploring South Africa's struggle liturgy, cultural competence and global viability. How entitlement transcends enlightenment. Clever titles. But South Africa isn't too dumb for democracy. We had democracy, especially in the Cape, for 150, 180 years, was it? And worked just fine. What they should say is, are the cause are too dumb for democracy. Because they're the ones who run this place into the ground. They can't vote competence and values. They seem to only want to vote triumph. Even Julius Malema says it was better under apartheid than it is now under ANC. Which, I've got no disagreement with them on that one, but I'm just saying it's interesting coming from his side. But those of us who lived under P.W. Botha know, of course, it was 1,000 times better under the evils of apartheid than it is under the enlightened liberation of the ANC. Here's an interesting statistic. Between 1962 and 1972, in those 10 years, the UN paid out $269 million to underdeveloped countries in Africa. In the same time period, South Africa spent $558 million, that's about double, on the development of the tribal homelands for self-rule of Transkei, Ciskei, Botswana, KwaZulu. So, apartheid South Africa was financially doing twice as much for developing black freedom and independence in Africa than the UN was doing for the whole of Africa at the same time period. Now, how's that for an interesting stat? And we would like our own homeland, actually. And if the ANC would treat us as badly as the Boers treated them, they would give us a homeland and build us and give us hundreds of millions of dollars every year in order to build our own soccer stadiums, infrastructure, which is universities and so on, which we don't tend to destroy. Do you know that racist is a word first coined by communist Leon Trotsky, a Bolshevik? And why did he gain this term? It was to intimidate people who opposed the Communist Party in the Soviet Union. Because this really started back in the 1920s, the Bolsheviks, being overwhelmingly Jewish, were continually being accused that what they were was, they weren't Russians, they weren't real Russians, they were anti-Russian, they weren't Christians, they were anti-Christian. And so Leonid Trotsky, who was head of the Red Army, said anybody who questioned their race was obviously a racist and therefore they should be killed. And so that was the way the firings were, by calling a person a racist. That's the etymology of the word racist, I'm told. The term useful idiot is normally assigned to Vladimir Lenin. Lenin used the term for people who were sympathizers of the communists and West. They're not communists, but he called them idiots because, as I said, they're selling us the rope with which we will hang them. We spit in their faces and they call it you. Now, here's Nathan Abrams, who says Jewish involvement in porn by this argument is the result of atavistic hatred of Christian authority. They're trying to weaken the dominant culture in America by moral subversion. There's some people who say that the reason why the vast majority of people running Hollywood and pornography hate Christianity is because they're Jewish and they hate Christians. And this is a way to subvert Christianity. Pornography, blasphemy, anti-Christian blasphemy. People have often asked, why is it that nobody's taking Muhammad's name in vain? Or Lenin's? Or Marx? Look what the British think is education. This is a school project in Britain. They get these so sorry t-shirts, they put them in chains, and they have them on their knees, and to say, I'm so sorry. Can you imagine? What is this teaching? People who didn't do the crime apologizing to people who weren't the victims. What does this prove, aside from the fact that some of these people are brain dead? John Wayne says, I'd like to know why well-educated idiots keep apologizing to lazy and complaining people who think the world owes them a living. Political correctness is actually cultural suicide. I mean, they're not just blind, they're stupid. You can see that this is meant to be Lady Justice, but she's blindfolded and she's decided to put the sword through herself. The West doesn't believe in its own justice anymore. Okay, Oprah Winfrey claims white people are the cause of racism in America. And by the way, you can just notice the things that she owns. She's really suffered racism in America. She's become a multi-billionaire on being black in America. So you can understand that black people in America really must suffer a lot. It's the race. So if you refuse to bake a gay cake, the government will destroy you. But if you sell dead baby body parts, the government will fund you. Planned Parenthood gets government funding, but some poor Christian running a bakery out of their home is going to get destroyed because they won't use the talent to bake a gay cake. We are not to bow before idols, and today we are bowing before the idol of political correctness. And one of them is Martin Luther King Jr., who, as we've documented in other times, was not Martin Luther King. He's Michael King, and he wasn't a doctor, and he wasn't a reverend, and he is a liar, a plagiarist, and a thief, and everything else, but that we could deal with another time. Communist revolution in the streets. 2008, the Messiah could walk on water. 2016 now, it's more like the mess rather than the Messiah. Is it a racist thing to point out that first ladies have deteriorated somewhat in America since Jackie Kennedy? I mean, is this the way first ladies of a country are meant to act? Is it racist to post this showing what the SADF used to be like and what it looks like now? Is this racist? They have different groups like Childline have been told that they cannot get any support because they help whites as well. And if you can't guarantee that the charity will only go to blacks, and so even those who are helping coloureds and whites and Indians are told you can't get government funding. It's got to be entirely for the blacks. Afrikaans must die. This was written on a Pretoria University notice board. So, under the devil incarnate, Hendrik Verwoerd, we had an average of 170 murders a year. Under St. Nelson Mandela, over 24,000 a year. Does this make sense to anybody? Is that a hammer and sickle we see behind us? New York Times whited out the backdrop because they didn't want to confuse the people. And they published this picture. They blotted out the big red flag with the red star and the yellow hammer and sickle because it didn't want to give the people a right idea. And yes, that's KJB Colonel Joe Slover next to Nelson Mandela, and that's with our boxes of matches and our necklaces, we'll liberate South Africa, Winnie Mandela. And these people are meant to be heroes that we're meant to worship, and our young people are meant to idolize. Now, if these are the idols lifted up before the young people, then how can you blame the young people today if they want to burn and throw rocks? I mean, they just want it to be like the heroes you've lifted up and said they're the fathers of a nation.
I specifically read today that the SACP, on their website, they clearly state that Mandela was a communist and was trained by them. Like, officially on there is the website.
Now, if you go onto the SAVotersGuide.com website, which Africa Christian Action runs, it's got a lovely feature where if you hover your cursor over the symbols of these horrible different political parties, you can go straight to the website. So I've never gone to the ANC website otherwise, but I thought, let me look at the ANC website. And click, there I was, and the first thing I noticed was a link to the Southern Communist Party website. So I thought, oh, well, let's go on to the Southern Communist Party website. And on the Southern Communist Party website, you could buy Lenin baseball caps, Lenin T-shirts, Lenin pins, and credit cards accepted. And I thought, what a bunch of capitalist hypocrites. But the next thing I noticed was that the Southern Communist Party will not be putting up any candidates for the next election. We advise all cadres to vote for the ANC candidates. Interesting. I saw a link to the Communist Party USA. Clicked on the Communist Party USA, and what did I see? Communist Party USA, well, they're also selling Lenin baseball caps, T-shirts, and credit cards accepted and all that. The hypocrisy never ends. But what they also said there was that Communist Party USA is not putting up a candidate for the next election, but advise all cadres to vote for Democratic Party candidate and President Obama. Interesting. I think it's always important to visit your enemies' websites and see what they're saying. Is this racist? Kill the Boer, kill the farmer. How many farmers have they murdered? Well, more than 3,000 farmers. These people. I'm not going to show the horrible pictures of people who've been murdered. We'll just show the pictures of them when they were alive. These are victims of people brutally murdered by the thugs. These are some of the victims. Their books documenting it. The Great South African Land Scandal, Land of Sorrow, farm murders. I've met widows of these people. But this is a story you're not meant to know about or talk about because it doesn't fit with it, and they all lived happily ever after under the rainbow South Africa. Many people overseas, there's something like 16 governments in Europe who've expressed their concern about the genocide in South Africa against whites. When they tried to take away our weapons, Thabo Mbeki in 1999, he immediately tried the moment he became president. We've been marching, protesting. Mandela was not locked up for being black. He was not locked up for opposing apartheid. He's locked up for over 156 acts of public violence, including terrorism, bombs. He started Umkhonto we Sizwe, the terror group that killed a lot of people, and he was trained by Che Guevara, no less, of Cuban DGI. I mean, this man was a high-level Communist Party Politburo member, senior member of the Communist Politburo, and he perjured himself over 50 years claiming he wasn't a communist. And the moment he died, everyone admitted, his family, everyone, he's always a senior member of the SA Communist Party. So he's a liar, a perjurer, which is more serious than just lying. He lied in court. He lied under oath. And Ms. Scarborough and I spent a lot of time arguing with church people who was, he's not a communist. He's sworn he's not a communist. And they were condemning us for saying he's a communist, even though he didn't even question the evidence admitted in the court, which was handwritten document, How to Be a Good Communist by Nelson Mandela. And he didn't question that that was an authentic copy. And he's taken part in singing Kill the Boer songs, and you can Google those too. Truth is hate to those who hate the truth. Presidents have never cost more and they've never done less. P.W. Botha cost this country 173,000. F.W. de Klerk cost twice that. Nelson Mandela, man the people, cost us 32 million. Thabo Mbeki was a whole lot more gracious, they said, 12 million. I don't think that's true because he spent 100 million rand of taxpayers' money to improve the security around presidency, but maybe that didn't get rated in. This president is apparently over the 250 million mark. So the cost of presidents going up, but the service you're getting out of them is going down. This is Nkandla. Now this man is an evil man, Cecil John Rhodes. He didn't take a rand or pound out of the public treasury when he was Prime Minister of the Cape. He built a house. This is his Nkandla. He built it, his money, and he gave it to the country, as well as giving us all land for University of Cape Town, paying for it, and Kirstenbosch Gardens and so on. So this is what Nkandlas used to look like, and they were paid for entirely by the Prime Minister, who didn't take a penny out of the public treasury. But we meant to curse the capitalist Cecil Rhodes, and we meant to praise the politicians. But remember, the capitalist fishes out of the sea. The government fish out of your basket. What do you call this? when England brings out a school textbook saying the English people, and they've got some Jamaican immigrant on the cover, I don't know, but I've trouble thinking of this man as an Englishman. So this is what they tell you. Those two jackals up top, they are very distinct species. But these two Europeans and Africans are exactly the same species. Now, how seriously can you take the scientists when they're saying those jackals are different species, but these are not different species? There's no such thing as race, people tell you. Even though if you check in the Bible and any commentary, and if you go to any concordance, there's a whole lot in race there. If race is only skin deep, why can you still tell which one is which? Here they've made everyone the same skin color. Can you possibly guess which races are represented here? I mean, this is really hard, because we don't have the color here, because it's all just a matter of color, right? It's got nothing to do with anything except color. Apparently, race is a social construct, but they support affirmative action. And if you stand up for the world's smallest ethnic minority, you're racist. The whites are the smallest grouping in the world, and yet somehow or another, we are now the majority, and everyone else is called a minority. Do you notice, everywhere in the world, affirmative action is to support the minority against the majority, except South Africa and Zimbabwe. Here, affirmative action is for the majority against the minority. Make sense? Your average anti-white says there's no place for racism in society, then he blames everything on white people. Isn't that racism? White people are the only race you can legally discriminate against and have laws against. Racist stands for rather annoying communist-inspired silencing tactic, which is exactly, I think, what Leonard Trotsky had in mind. Nothing says progressive like recycling tried and failed 19th century ideas. The ANC, which, have you noticed, ANC is the middle letters of cancer. And you can tell why. What is a cancer cell? It's something that's not doing its job. It's just parasiting off the rest of the body, endangering the life of the rest of the body. The ANC is a cancer in the life of the country. So let's get this straight. If you support these black conservatives, you're a racist. But if you don't like this communist, you're a racist, right? Alexander Solzhenitsyn said you must understand the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators. The people who run Hollywood are the same people who murdered all the Christians in Russia, and you can tell that because they never want the story to get out. They're anti-Christians. And here's a EU founding father, Richard Kudahove Kalergi, in 1925, saying, we intend to turn Europe into a mixed race of Asians and Negroes ruled over by the Jews, he says. And here's this horrible character, Nathan Abrams, saying, Jews in America, and I must say, these are not real Jews. You can be sure, these are atheists. These are Christ-hating atheists. Have been sexual revolutionists. A large amount of material on sexual liberation was written by Jews, he says. Those at the forefront of the movement which forced America to adopt a more liberal view of sex were Jewish. They ran Hollywood from the beginning. We were at the fourth vanguard of the sexual revolution in the 1960s, and he mentions all these people like Herbert Marcuse and Paul Goddard. We replaced Marx and Trotsky and Lenin as required revolutionary reading. Pornography thus becomes a way of defiling Christian culture, and as it penetrates the very heart of mainstream America, there's no doubt consumed by the same Anglo-Saxon, or what they call WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, WASPs. Its subversive character becomes more charged. Now, Mr. Scarborough would remember in 1985, we were at the SACL conference, Southern Conference of Evangelical Leaders, and after I gave my presentation, somebody accused me of being a WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. That actually explained what WASP was. I didn't know what a WASP was then. I'm a WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Male, they can add, and now they can add heterosexual. Ugh. Without AIDS. Ah! I mean, how bad does it get? And so, I remember saying, the fact that I'm white and Anglo-Saxon is entirely God's doing. I used to think I was responsible for becoming a Protestant, but now that I understand the sovereignty of God, I think you've got to take this up with God on every point. I mean, really and truly, how is it that it's now a crime to be white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, or whatever else we might be? Thomas Paine said, "He who dares not offend cannot be honest." Apparently race doesn't exist, but white people are evil. So somebody wrote this and posted this on social media. "Dear blacks, if you find whites coming to your shack to rob, rape or murder you, or you find whites burning down your schools, bus or trains, or stoning your cars or defacing your statues, then you're most welcome to be racist." And this is bringing up a point. There's a lot of people in this country who are as liberal, as tolerant, as good neighborly as it comes, many of whom even supported the overthrow of apartheid and replaced the National Party and were steadfast opponents of the National Party, who today are fed up. Because you cannot keep murdering, stealing, lying against people and expect them to not get fed up after a while. Your average leftist preaches diversity, but it thinks we're all the same. You think only white people are racist? Then you're racist. Thabo Mbeki said, "Only whites can be racist. It's impossible to call a black a racist." Thabo Mbeki said that. I mean, how racist can you get? The fact is, apartheid started at a time when a lot of the black people walk around naked or semi-naked, when there's cannibalism all over the place. Would you think, oh, when I go to work today, I'd like my wife to be pushing the prams amongst these people with my kid, walking around with the spears and so on? It's natural that at the beginning there were racial segregations, and men have been wise. It's not the sort of thing I would have liked to have done. Maybe they shouldn't have found a name for it. But the fact still is that as people got more civilized, you could change the rules. But right now they're making it out that everyone lived in harmony and tranquility and utopia, and along came the whites and they ruined everything. Apartheid introduced suffering into Africa. Colonialism is responsible for the problems. But the fact is, the first missionaries who went to the Gilbert Islands and so on, they were attacked and eaten by cannibals. This is Erromanga, John Williams. Now, Durban beachfront under the evil apartheid. Durban beachfront today. Durban beachfront under apartheid, Durban beachfront on New Year's Eve day. Can you see the great improvement? Durban has spent how many billions on their tourism in the front? And is this going to help tourism? But now we've got people saying we're not all free in South Africa. We still live in shacks. Well, what did they think? And then you get these people like the Bang Bang Club, Greg Marinovich and Joe Silver. These people went around and they... I wouldn't recommend you see this film because it's a hard film to see. I reviewed it. I've got the review on our website. But between 1990 and 1994, they were in the townships documenting the wholesale mass murder going on between Mkhwanazi and ANC. And it was as brutal as anything. And you can see this is totally 100% black on black violence. Or black against red, as the case may be. But the brutality of this, and these liberals who didn't have anything except anti-apartheid in their baggage, but as they documented this, I mean, sickening, the lack of compassion, the brutality, burning people alive. But then these people got completely dehumanized by two. I mean, there they were focusing up, getting the right light reading and asking some people to get out the way so they could get a better picture. Mm-hmm. And next thing, the security police want to get some of their pictures, because some of the pictures may identify the people who did the murders. Oh, now these people suddenly have principles. We can't share these pictures with the police. It would expose our sources. But these are murderers. And they weren't willing to help in the prosecution of murderers by providing the pictures. And it became such a cause of all newspapers trying to protect the journalistic integrity. What integrity do you have when you can be effectively an accessory to murder and to covering it up? I mean, I don't think of these people as heroes at all. Not at all. By the way, this here is the poster child of gay marriage in New Zealand. This Asian and this white trash adopted this, they mentioned being some kind of homosexual marriage, and adopted this poor little kid. And it turned out from when it was a baby. And this scandal came out, I think, was it last year or the year before. They were not just sexually abusing this kid the whole way along. They were renting it out for other, say, sick pedophile scum to come to New Zealand and sexually abuse this kid. Now, this is the poster child that they put on the front page to promote why gays should be allowed to marry and why gays should be allowed to adopt kids. Anybody seen this in the major news about the rest of the story? So, when this man shot this man, who was obviously a criminal, I mean, look at the criminal picture, that was 25 media coverage. But when this Muslim killed all those people, that was not important. And when this Muslim killed those people, that's not so important. So, it's just, there's a narrative. This is the picture they published of when Zimmerman shot this criminal. That's a picture they posted of him. Not the picture of what he looked like at time. You do notice he's grown up a bit since then. This is when he is 12. This is when he got shot. All the newspapers published this picture. Why? Because if you saw the picture of him at time, you might get the impression he's a criminal. Part of a gang. And when this came out, President Obama said, if I had a son, he'd look like this chap. Except he looked like that chap. So, racism in America. Here's the stats. People want to talk about race. Here it is. Blacks killed by whites, 2% of the time. Blacks killed by police, 1% of the blacks killed in America are killed by police. Whites killed by police, 3% of the whites are killed by police. So, police account for 3 times more whites being killed than blacks being killed. Whites killed by whites, 16%. Whites killed by blacks, 81%. Blacks killed by blacks, 97%. Most blacks in America are killed by blacks. And the police are not picking on blacks. In fact, they pick on whites. They're far less likely to use their weapons against a black thug than they are against a white thug. I mean, that's the crime stats. That's the facts. People arrested for crimes. Remember, blacks in America are only 10% of the population. But they account for 75% of the shootings, 43% of the rapes, and 62% of the arrests for murder. So, if you want to talk about race in America, yes, the blacks are far more lawless, far more violent, far more rapists, far more murderers, but the police shoot them far less often than if they're white. And if you go to South Africa, you'll find the stats are probably also disproportionate. Most crimes are not being committed by whites against blacks, but if you read the newspapers, you'd get that impression. Black Americans are 12% of the population in America, but they're committing 32% of the rapes, 34% of the assaults, 54% of the robberies, 49% of all murders, and 91% of all murdered black Americans are killed by other black Americans. The truth isn't racist. The truth is just the truth. And why do we say this? We wouldn't want to say it. But because they keep screaming and shouting that they are victims of racism. Booker T. Washington is an excellent black American example. There is a class of colored people, he said, who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy, and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose their grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs. Now this is about 100 years ago, Booker T. Washington's explaining exactly what's going on. It's like Judas, saying why was that perfume not sold and money given to the poor? And then John says, Judas wasn't concerned about the poor. Judas wasn't charged the money bags, and Judas was the thief. These race baiters have done more to hurt black people than any white could have ever done. They have put race relations back in America more than 50 years. I would say, as somebody who's just 56 years old, and people older than me might be able to extend this, but I'd say in my lifetime, I've never known worse race relations in this country than right now. In fact, the race relations in the height of the war, during the height of the riots, during the most intense time apartheid, was better than the race relations we've got now. This ANC government's done more to harm black-white relations in this country than anything else, and Obama's done more to harm relations in America. And of course, there's the Muslim dimension. Why are we saying all this? You will know the truth, Jesus said, and the truth will set you free. God's word is truth. God is truth. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Under the duties required in the Ninth Command, the Westminster Confession, Westminster Larger Catechism, lists the duty of preserving and promoting truth, the duty to stand for the truth, the duty to do so from the heart, the duty to speak the truth and only the truth in matters of judgment and justice. the duty to speak the truth at all times, the duty to study and practice everything true, noble, lovely, and of good report. Under the sins forbidden in the Ninth Commandment, the Westminster standards include the sin of giving false evidence, the sin of lying, the sin of concealing the truth, the sin of misconstruing intentions, the sin of exaggerating minor faults, the sin of perverting the truth to a wrong meaning. Truth is truth even if no one believes it. A lie is a lie even if everyone believes it. And the truth doesn't change just because you don't want to hear it. Truth sounds like hate to the people who hate the truth. Truth is the new hate speech. During times of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. What I've said tonight sounds offensive to some people. But the scripture teaches us that Satan is deceiving the nations. And if we find ourselves in full agreement with Hollywood and the Cape Crimes and the Sunday Crimes and Slime Magazine and Newspeak and Useless News and World Report, then we need to stop and carefully consider where we've been deceived. If we agree with the world on the major issues, then Satan has deceived us. Propaganda, the calculated manipulation of public opinion to serve political and ideological interests, is pervasive. Animal Farm in 1984 sums it all up. George Orwell said, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder seem respectable. That's what they're doing. Mandela was not a communist. Abortion isn't murder. Abortion is just the termination of pregnancy. It's just the removal of a tissue. I mean, they're just making murder sound respectable. They're trying to make lies sound truthful. And the further a nation drifts from the truth, the more they will hate the people who speak the truth, which is why even a Facebook posting can get you into trouble at UCT. The media is lying. In the Soviet Union, it was called propaganda. Pravda and Izvestia. Well, today we've got a whole lot of lies from our media. SATV, what a bunch of lies. What lies behind us and what lies before us are small matters to what's lying right to our faces. It's called tell-lie vision. The media represents the truth in our society, but the truth lies. The news media is lying by what it omits to teach, by its change of emphasis, by its distortion, by outright lies, by putting words and images in your mouth and eyes that were never there before. Our modern media is enslaving us. If you don't control your mind, someone else will. And that's why it's all this guilt manipulation that's made it possible to have Muslims invading Christian lands, the biggest pedophile ring in the world, destroy their own countries, and now invite them into ours. Minority is a term used by liars to describe the world's smallest population. The minority is describing the majority populations, and we, who are the minority, are being called the majority. Thanks to all the refugees coming in. And so the goal here is nothing less than genocide. The goal is, why is there such a hatred to the whites? Well, it's because whites used to represent Protestant Christian truth. And right now most of our people are so backslidden. They don't at all. But the result is, they're going to get wiped out. And this man gave the goal of replacing the people of Europe, bringing down the population. He started this plan in 1920, speaking about this plan, and the EU gives the award in this man's name every year to the politician who's done the most to bring about diversity to Europe. The goal has been, since the 1920s, the communists have had the plan to bring down the European population and bring in massive amounts of foreigners. That's why sterilization, abortion, massive taxation, force the woman out of the home to work in the workplace so that they can't have as many children. Before women were pushed into the marketplace for tax purposes, the average woman in Europe was producing 6 to 6.9 children. Today, 1.2 maybe. And that is why Europe's come way down in population. And of course, homosexuality, pornography, all that helps. Break down the family, and now massive amounts of Muslims poured in. Result? Eurabia. And this is why people are standing up and opposing Islamization and saying they're not welcome. Refugees are not welcome. This isn't a joke. These people are bringing an epidemic of rape. And yet you've got useful idiots like the Swede who posts this, I will trade racists for rapists. I'd rather have a rapist Muslim than a racist white. Are there people that stupid in the world? Sadly, we have found that so. Cicero said there exists a law not written down anywhere, but inborn in our hearts, a law which comes to us not by training or custom or reading, but by derivation, an absorption and adoption from nature itself. A law which has come to us not from theory, but by practice, not by instruction, but by natural intuition. I refer to the law that lays it down, that if our lives are endangered by plots of violence, armed robbers or enemies, any and every method of protecting ourselves is morally right. God has given every one of his creatures weapons, fight or flight, camouflage or weapons, horns, tusks, claws, teeth, talons, fangs. And yet there's Christians who think we must just be doormats. We're not meant to resist. No, we are meant to resist. Every animal will fight to protect the young, and there's something wrong with us if we won't. This is what's at stake. They said that our people used to be savages, but even the barbarians were more civilized than our present people. This is the Europe that is in danger of being made extinct, and they're doing it through Planned Parenthood, Mary Stopes' sacrifice. This is meant to become something of the past. They don't want whites. We've got to breed out the blue eyes and the blonde hair and green eyes, no more redheads. They call it diversity, but it's not diversity, because if they're each in a glass, that's diversity. But when you mix them together, it's no longer diversity. This is what's behind the whole thing. This is a cultural genocide. It is white genocide. That's what they're planning. If you worship the enemy, you're defeated. If you adopt your enemy's religion, you're enslaved. If you breed with the enemy, you are destroyed. We have a great heritage, a great Christian heritage. Is this all to be thrown up? And this is why in the Reformation Society we're trying to celebrate our history, because our history is being attacked. We're trying to remind our people of our great heritage and the great cultural achievements, great architectural achievements, the tremendous spiritual revivals, the phenomenal architectural feats, the scientific marvels. What God has accomplished through the Protestant nations is phenomenal. And it must not be allowed to end in our lifetime. We have to fight. We have to resist. We have to do everything we can to preserve this great heritage. No civilization on earth has achieved as much as the Protestant Christian tradition from Europe. And this is why we need to rediscover that martial spirit. We've got to have the intellects and also the warrior skills to be able to preserve all that's good and right and just and excellent and noble amongst our people. How can you compare the mud huts with this? The witch doctors couldn't produce anything. I think it is better to do right, even if we suffer in doing so, than to incur the reproach of our consciences or posterity. If Australians are ever foolish enough to open the gates to people other than Europeans, they'll soon find themselves fighting desperately to stop the nation from being flooded by hordes of non-integratables. A word of sanity back in the 1960s. But today we're told to coexist with people who want to kill us. Remember, while their children are learning to kill us, our children are being taught how to tolerate them. This is a threat to our families. It's a threat to our freedom. It's a threat to civilization. It's a threat to Christianity. These people hate Christianity, and they are trying to destroy our faith. This is not immigration. This is not asylum seeking. This is an invasion. It's an Islamic invasion Trojan horse, and that's the name of our last Frontline Fellowship newsletter. Praise God for Christians in Europe who are standing up and they're saying no to the mosques, no to Islam, no to Sharia law, and they're using public events. This is the largest protest ever seen in Poland. People marching to protest against Islamization of their country, burning the EU flag. The EU flags have come down all over Poland. Hungary is doing the same thing. Switzerland has voted against any more minarets. There's been marches in Europe, all over. In Germany, they're speaking about Islam being the suicide of Europe. No burqas, no mosques. Stop the Islamization of Europe. But sadly, the police often attack these demonstrators. You can apparently be a Muslim radical, but you're not allowed to. But the good thing is, you're seeing a resurgence of crosses, a resurgence of people coming back to their Christian roots, from people who've been far from the Christian roots for a long time. So perhaps bad times are good for spiritual work. Our biggest enemy is apathy. And so we should use times like this, when people are alerted, what's going on? Our culture's being attacked, our universities are being attacked. this is a good time to teach people what is at stake and to get people serious, back to God, back to the Bible. What we're dealing with is a new Trojan horse. And this is a good posting, Islam out of Europe. You know Latin? Deus vult? God wills it. That is the slogan of the Crusaders. So, it turns out that those screaming racists are the worst racists of all. Any questions or comments? Yes.
This presentation, is it on audio?
Yes, it is on audio. We will make it available on sermon audio if possible tomorrow. Yes, we know we've got to deal with this. I will try and get this PowerPoint is actually two PowerPoints. I'll try and load both of them as soon as possible. Just see what Christopher can do on our web tomorrow.
On your web, will you put on Chris
It'll be on two.
Audio as well, a link.
Well, we've got the links for this. That goes on SlideShare, but that'll be on our SlideShare link. It'll be first on the university campus, Carson campus, and then on the racism. So I'll put two together. But so we'll keep one audio but two PowerPoints. Any other comments? Yes.
How do you suggest we reach out to, for example, the Gaza on this matter? Because I visited a friend's house and there's a lady staying there. She's a part of Campus Crusade for Christ, coming from Eastern Cape, mm-hmm. and she believes, you know, Mandela is the best president ever. And
is she pro-life? I mean, that's the first question, you know. Don't you believe in pro-life position?
She accepts that all politicians are liars.
Does she realize that Mandela is a politician?
she accepts that, but she's just saying...
Isn't that strange? Isn't that... It's just bizarre when you... You can understand some people like some politicians, but at a certain point you've got to say, my Christian principles are more important. It's disturbing. I would recommend when you're dealing with people who are very diverse for you, the best thing you can do is ask questions. Ask questions which are hard for them to answer. You don't always have to tell them they're wrong. You just need to ask the questions and let them grapple with it. And hopefully they'll start, how do I put this together? This is a problem. Because if you're pro-life, you do know that Mandela legalized abortion. In fact, he rammed it through. He wouldn't even allow a conscience vote from his own party members. His own party criticized him over forcing this through.
She claimed he stopped racist discrimination, and then he
actually no. I think the best thing he did was say never, never, never again will any South African be discriminated against on the basis of race. But then he immediately afterwards started bringing racial discrimination and affirmative action. Unless he's just lying and saying what he needed to, because I mean communists lie. Vladimir Lenin said to lie. And to lie convincingly is a sign of superior intelligence. To tell the truth is a petty bourgeois habit. That's what Vladimir Lenin said. So, communists think that lying is an art form to be perfected. You know, this is a strange thing. The Muslims and the communists would be enemies at some point. But at the moment, they seem to be allies of convenience. Because they both have someone they hate more. Notice how the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes never got on together. And the Herodians. And the Romans. But they all got together to crucify Christ. They didn't have anything in common except the hate of Christ. The only thing they ever agreed on. It tells you something about the motivation of different groups.
At the University of Stellenbosch, at my first graduate residence, I was placed firstly with the Muslim and then with the person from SASCO who was supportive of all communism and everything. And I asked the organizers why do they do this? And they say they want to force integration and diversity.
But you know, to be more honest, what they're actually after is not integration. What they're after is the eradication of Afrikaans. And the eradication of Christianity and the eradication of all whites. But first the Afrikaans. I mean, they hate the Afrikaans the most, but why do they hate the Afrikaans so much? Have the Afrikaans done anything to particularly hurt them? No. I think what it is, it's an anti-Christian thing. God has used the Afrikaans people in a great way for the gospel and for advancing civilization in this continent and country. And it's the people who've done the most who are the most hated. When you get down to it, who's full of anger and hatred against Arabs who've done nothing good for this world. I mean, what have they ever done except slavery and more terrorism and suicide bombings and beheadings? But nobody's getting that angry about the Arabs. There's so much hatred for the Protestant Christians in particular. I think what it comes down to is the more you achieve, the more you hate it. The higher you rise, the more you hate it. It's just jealousy. James Kennedy explained this. He said, the more you achieve, the higher you go, the more opposition you're going to get. He said, the only safeguard against reproach is obscurity. If you don't want to be criticized, say nothing. Do nothing. Be nothing. And so if you do achieve something, you've got to expect the cost is going to be, you're going to be hated by those who don't achieve much. And the civilization that's achieved the most in all of history is the Protestant Christian civilization. And so Protestant Christian civilization is the most hated. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's just an antichrist spirit that you get in every section of the world. And it's just, you see the Muslims and the communists working together. And the feminists. What do the feminists have in common with the Muslims? And you've got these atheists and evilists. They don't have that much in common, but they all have one thing in common. They all hate Christians. So that's why they work together for now. I mean, they end up killing one another, sure, at some point, but for now they can work together. But I would not be distressed. Bad times are good for spiritual work. Our biggest enemy is apathy. That our people's comfort is disturbed is good. Maybe people will be more teachable in a time like this. This is a time to teach on history, on issues, on how to answer skeptics, how to be more evangelistic. This is a better time for evangelism because people are more open. If everything's going well and rustic, they're just going downstream on their lilos all the way down with the dead fish down the stream. And they're not interested. But the moment there's crisis, that's a good time to try and communicate. This is most teaching time. And it also is a good time for us to remind people why state universities are not really a good idea. They're a good mission field. It's not the kind of place we want to send our children. We like our children to be getting a safe Christian education, not getting, well, why would you want to be afraid for their safety or their mental and spiritual safety in those areas? So there's a lot of things that we can teach at this time. But let's really all get serious about ministry on the campuses. Now that you can see what a mess our campuses are, now it's obvious, it's no more secret. Every single church anywhere near a university should be involved in supporting campus ministries and doing ministry evangelism discipleship to people on campus. If you know any teachers on campus, they need a lot of prayer and help. Probably a bodyguard service. Right, any other comments, questions?
Was Lenin or Stalin or Trotsky, were they Jewish?
Yes, they were all either Jewish or half-Jewish. It's been best documented by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I think of the 800 top Communist Party Politburo key people in the Bolshevik Revolution, it was in the 764s. It was overwhelmingly Jewish. So they just... But when you say Jewish, it's not like any of them were Orthodox or religious Jews. They're all secular humanist, atheist, Marxist. But it seems that you can get those who become Messianic Jews, and then you get those who Synagogue of Satan. It's just... What an extreme. But when you look at the hatred for Christ from people like Trotsky and Marx, Lenin was just... he was out of this world insane. Stalin was half-Jewish, Trotsky was totally... But they were just the whole lot. And that's why it was... they started to make... If anyone said anything like that, then you're accused of being anti-Semitic. Whereas, you know, Christians are hardly anti-Christian or religious Jews, but these are the atheists. They tried to turn the racist issue, which is... And then it's transferred now into the white-black issue.
When I did a quick search on just communism in South Africa, I got a lot of links to Jewish involvement in South Africa from a communist side.
Yes.
But I was wondering why they would actually want a communist here if our government has been so anti Israel in such strong manner.
This is the bizarre thing, but just look how much so many of the comments are anti-Israel. Isn't that interesting and strange? But there's a huge... In America, just take a country like America. 98% of all Jews in America voted for Obama? That poem is anti-Israel. Why would you? I've asked Jews in America, why would you support Obama? Well, I don't know, but our people are just very liberal, and it's bizarre. But you look at who the top whites in the ANC: Ronnie Kishrills, Joe Slover. Who was that other creep? I mean, all three of them are the top whites in the ANC were Jewish. But you don't see them at all in the Mandela Long Walk to Freedom film. There's not a single white visible on the ANC side. There's not a single black in the police, army, or prison wardens on the National Party side. It's all just so you don't get confused. You know? The blacks are all the good guys, the whites are all the bad guys. Let's not get confused about black policemen or white communists running the ANC. So Joe Slover is nowhere in the whole film on Mandela's life, even though he is the right-hand man.
And the word Invictus that they chose, is, I don't know the meaning.
Invictus is the poem written by an anti-God, anti-Christ atheist, and the full word, the key text is, it matters not how straight the gate, nor how charged with punishment the scrolls. To whatever gods there are, I declare, I am the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul. Now this is a fist in the hand of face of God. It's an anti-Christ atheistic statement, because what's the gate that's straight? Jesus. What's the scroll that's charged with punishments? The Bible. He says, it doesn't matter about the Bible, it doesn't matter about Jesus. To whatever gods there are, say, I'm the master of my faith. I'm the captain of my soul. And that quote, that whole quote I've just given you now, was quoted by the Chancellor of Cornerstone Christian University across the road at a, what do you call a final graduation service, a couple of years ago. And he gave it in a positive sense. In the words of Nelson Mandela's character in Invictus, for I say to you, I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul. That's a chance of a Christian university. By the way, in the whole 3 hours, they didn't quote from the Bible or any reformer once. But the quotes from Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, Rousseau, and Martin Luther King and Mandela and all this often.
So how do you relate to people that say they're Christian, but this is like plain anti-Christ, like,
this is why we have biblical worldview seminars and biblical worldview materials and understand times. Many Christians are Christians in their head, they're Christians in their heart, but they're secular humanists in their mind. Because many people feel like Christians, but they think like practical humanists or practical atheists, actually. And the reason is because what we watch, what we see, what we read, entertainment, education, news media, it affects us. So if we are primarily getting our input from secular humanist sources, when our heart feels Christian, our mind will start to think like this.
I was giving a reply to a major Christian camp in our denomination, and then they said, I said, this is the critique I have. They said to me, we don't agree with your statements. We have a lot of reports that people had a positive time. Huh. Or a positive, they enjoyed it at the camp.
Hmm. Well, I've got notes. There's two sets of notes here that we've written. There's one from Africa Action, one from Frontline, dealing with the racism issues that's going on campus, which we are sending out at the moment and putting on a website. So do feel free to take that. You'll see other notes of previous Reformation studies in those stands and Livingston Fellowship around the corner in the hallway. If anyone needs Bibles, New Testaments, evangelistic materials, we can help you. We've got quite a lot here. But you'll see in the hallway there's quite a few in the stands, chapel libraries that have come in too. Any other comments before we close in prayer? When you start to do damage, there's what they call collateral damage. It's very foolish. But it doesn't help, because education isn't helped if you are starting to burn books and paintings, artwork. My daughter was very brave in trying to stand up against them, but not very wise, because the hostility of these people for anybody, they're not seeing an art student or something, they're seeing someone who's white. This is the problem. I do need to warn you, especially ladies, that there's the knockout game. Have you heard of the knockout game?
Yeah.
It's a game which you, and if you just have to type it into Google, you'll get a few of these popping up. Blacks in America, there's a black game in America. They have friends film them, probably on their cell phones, walking up to a white, normally a white woman, and just knocking them out. And the goal is to knock out a white with one blow. They normally come up from behind. They try to hit you often in the temple. That's the easiest way to knock a person out. And they often go for old women. But any white woman, and they might be sitting on a park bench, they just walk up and without any warning suddenly hit the person. I don't know if they have a knuckle duster to do it, because most people just look like they fall flat down. They've killed some people with doing this, and then they walk up to the camera often smiling. I mean, the face is right there. If they're being that open and blunt, they're not wearing masks or anything like this. This is just a, you know, look at me, and they post it on their posts and sites, and some people have picked these up. It's a game that's in America, but I wouldn't be surprised if it comes here. Then I saw somebody posted in Pretoria University, there's one white man just standing minding his own business. You could see a black camaraderie and hit him, but he's a bit tough, so it didn't knock him out. He turned around, this chap was running it. But I'm sure the intention was to. So I don't know if they, because of social media, it's coming here, but be alert to your space and be able to, if you haven't been doing any martial arts skills of how to defend yourself, you need to think about it. If you don't have defensive things like electric shockers, sprays and whatever it is, you should seriously consider it. Think about having flashlights, and you need, if you're ever going to be out of your car, these things are strong, tough. You need a big, strong, tough type of metal torch that you have at night. You need lights. You've got to be alert. Lock your cars. We're living in a time of racial animosity and hatred. Don't become a victim. Just be alert to where you are and what goes on. And if you can see the situation is bad, the best thing you can do is avoid it. Don't get sucked into it, because that's what happens. People get lost, get the wrong place, end up in the wrong part of town, ask for directions, next thing they get murdered. Look, I mean, there's different things that one has to have, but I mean, I think everybody should be armed, ready at all times, no matter what, and know how to use your weapons, whatever you have. But just be alert. This knockout game, they come up from behind often, but they might even be walking in front, and as they get close, wham, right against, it's normally the temple. You've got to be able to know how to defend and block or avoid, duck, but just watch space, and you can sometimes see when a person's a bit intense, and if they moving a bit more seriously than, you know, and don't walk in the middle of a group of loiterers who are sitting there ready to gang up on you. You've got to be alert to the fact that this sort of thing is, it somehow gives worthless people a sense of accomplishment if they can cause injury to people who they despise or hate. There are some vindictive, nasty people out there, and you just be alert. And of course, you can get those people in any race, but the trouble is, right now, there's a lot of black people in this country who didn't grow up in the reality of what was apartheid South Africa, and they just have the lies they've been taught, and they feel such resentment. If they knew the reason why they're unemployed and the reason why they've got all these problems is because the ANC government's policies, then they'd understand something. But they've been told it's all the white's fault. Now, how it can be the white's fault when the ANC has been running the country for the last 21 years? Don't ask questions like that. You must just believe this. And somehow or another, it's all someone else's fault. And all their frustration, they've been promised so much, been given so little, all their frustration is channeled towards the white's fault. Now, this can happen almost anywhere. This is where we are, and sadly, we're the minority, and we're the targets, and we're the ones being blamed. And you might have an exemplary record of good neighborliness and kindness to others, and you may never discriminate against anyone your whole life. It doesn't mean you can't be a victim. That's the sad reality. And I am amazed the amount of times I have, when I've been opposing communism, had somebody accuse me of being a racist and say, you don't know the first thing about me. You don't know what I've done, where I've studied, what I've sacrificed, and what I've gone through in order to help black people across Africa. But if that makes them feel better to accuse somebody who has planted over 100 schools in black areas and several hospitals and clinics and delivered hundreds of tons of medicines and food aid and other things to black people, if I can be called a racist, if that makes you feel better, well, I mean, which of us are safe? I mean, if a missionary who's dedicated his life to helping black people can be called a racist, then the moment you oppose communism, they're going to call you a racist. And that shouldn't bother us, because that's actually the origin of the word. So, let's...
The interesting thing, if you go to a mosque, they can preach, I've been in a mosque, they said, you know, all the unbelievers, the Kafirs, this and this and this, but let the white man dare to say the word Kafir in front, you'll see, you get welcome.
Yeah, well, that is true. Kafir is an Arabic word from the Quran, which Muhammad used to describe all unbelievers, which, by the way, includes us. So, It's not meant to be a racist word. It's meant to be everyone who's an unbeliever. So the Muslims use the word for all of us. And of course, kind of death penalty. Then. So let's close in prayer. Who'd like to close in prayer for us? Thank you.
We come to you, Almighty God, and we ask your guidance in this time. We ask you to teach us to walk wisely and to speak with knowledge. And we ask you to help us to have an impact on our surroundings, where people actively try to neutralize us and prohibit us from proclaiming the truth that is within us. We know that you've given so many people your truth, but many people are shying away from the critical issues. And when our brothers are suffering and we do nothing, then there is a clear indication that we are not striving to follow your heart. I see that many people are becoming laid back, especially our brothers and sisters of other races, saying they've arrived now and having a feeling of accomplishment and entitlement, have stopped to protect the weak and the innocent. And I pray that you will raise up their hearts to see the need and to prohibit them from ever inciting violence against your children. Please remove those and destroy the thrones of the wicked, and help us to strongly adhere to all your principles and never to compromise on any aspects of the faith. Thank you.
Amen.